I do appreciate your asking if the frequency was in use. Helps to put on a little power, I guess. I appreciate your asking if the frequency was in use. Starting here on 3995 for with a QSO, and 3993 fires up. $39.95. Okay, bye.
Radio, radio, radio.
I forgot. You're one of those hi-fi guys. I've since made bandwidth correction.
This really isn't hi-fi. This is just quasi-hi-fi. It's only 4KC.
I'm the one who came up with that term, the quasi prefix. Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, you are giving me a really nice signal. This is N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey. And I'm talking to you from all new settings. And boy, did I get an education. It was a night that had to be, and that is, I learned, and it just took a lot of experimentation, tons of experimentation, and you're right, everything is so interconnected. Sideband with AM, with the CRL, with Audacity recordings, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking I might have ended up having to move the potentiometer up back to get the audacities right, but it turns out that I went the other direction. Once again, it's almost, I'm lucky. If I didn't have any more audio, I'd need some kind of amplifier to up it so that the audacities would be okay. But as far as it all turned out, things went well. As for the AM tuning, I followed your method, and then I double-checked it by researching on the internet, and I got a scope pattern as recommended there, and I, you know, went both ways to make sure it was really truly at the sweet spot, a little bit less, and there was incomplete routing of, say, the top section of the sine wave, you know, was undermodulated, and if I went too far, it gave the pattern of an overmodulated balanced modulator. And I saw there a similar photograph of what happens if you overmodulate a plate modulated AM transmitter, how it looks. The peaks are separated simply by the line instead of intersecting there. So I'll tell you more details next time, which will be in a minute or two after you get done digesting what I just told you. And I ought to get a certain person here on, here goes.
Into IRJ.
Oh, the volume wasn't up high enough. I'll do that again.
Into IRJ.
Yeah, there's an echo because I have the speakers on, but I'll fix that by the time you get back. Over.
Okay, N2IRJ, WB4AIO. I'm a little worried that you're still hitting it too lightly. The way you were describing it, you were obsessing over the ALC meter. And really, you should ignore the ALC meter and just adjust the audio exactly as we did with the white noise. It should not be changed from that setting. You want audio to be hitting a 0 dB on the companion meter all the time with every syllable, and not going over, but not going much under either. So If you're not doing that, then you're not reaching the peak capability of Power SDR, WB4AIO.
Roger, I am doing that, and I could be making Henrietta go way high if I would exceed zero, but I'm obeying the limits that God set upon this planet.
Well, it's sounding fine. I'm listening to you in the 4 kilohertz bandwidth, and it sounds clean. What level of compression are you reaching on the AFEX?
On the AFEX, I'm going up to the end, believe it or not. On the Duro, I'm doing pretty nicely. I think you'd be proud if I close talk like this enough. I'm not hitting any red peaks. If I really yelled loudly, I would. But I'm just short of that. It's tastefully done.
Okay, let's switch to 7.5. Standby, America.
We got those invaders coming in on us, something like 3994 right now. Hello, hello down there. The frequency's in use, 3995.
Okay, I just switched to 7.5 bandwidth. I think the band is clearing out and it supports it at the moment.
Well, you might not have heard what I just said. We have non-friendlies invading. I'm still in 4 kilohertz. I'm going to switch. Remember, I didn't have time to fix that profile, though. Let's see. Give me a second. I'll make it like this one. I am now returning into IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey, United States. Hello. Huh. Interesting. This wider bandwidth, I need to increase the drive. Hello. Hello, Betty. Hello. I'll be darned. The same drive isn't applicable to every bandwidth. Hello. Yeah. Okay, there, that ought to make you happy. I'm touching zero right now, a 29, whereas I'm at a 20 with 4 kilohertz bandwidth. What do you think of that?
It's your audio mixer settings, not your Behringer, but your Power SDR mixer settings are different for the two profiles. What you've got to do, instead of adjusting the 7.5 profile, what you do is you just save the 4 kilohertz test profile that we perfected without the compander and all that. Just save that under a new name. Save it as test 7.5 or something like that. And then, without changing anything else, only change the high frequency low pass filter. Don't change anything else. And if you do that, then you'll have an exact duplicate of your 4 kilohertz test profile, but the bandwidth will be 7.5. Then there'll be no difference in the gain needed. It'll all be exactly the same. The difference is that mixer has got a gain pot on it, and that is saved with the transmit profile, and undoubtedly it's different for this profile, the old profile. So that's the difference, WB4AIO. In any case, it sounds great no matter what.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay, I turned off the compander, And I'm still down. I'm going to have to put it back up to the where it was, 24, 25, 27, 29, 29. Yeah, that's as good as it gets. I don't understand what I'm doing wrong here. There is no internal equalization going on anymore. Over.
I didn't say anything about equalization. I said the internal Power SDR audio mixer setting. In other words, just don't try to do what you're doing. Don't try to do that. Go back to the 4 kilohertz test profile. Save it under a new name, like 7.5 test or something like that. Then don't change anything else, but only change the high frequency low pass filter to 7.5 KC. Then save it again. And then you will have all the gains will be exactly the same as 4 kilohertz. You won't have to change the gain.
I understand. Another method would be for me to go into Mixer and make everything the same. I know it's hard to see all those little details. Would that be line in RCA or balanced line in or line out? Maybe probably line out, right? Line out, is that the one? Over?
No, see, don't touch that at all because you'll mess up your recordings. Please, please, please don't touch those settings. Just do it the way I said.
But wouldn't that accomplish the same?
No, that will affect your recordings. No, line out? No, definitely not. See, clearly that's... No, that will not work.
Well, how do I directly combat this problem? You're giving me a workaround, you know, doing the 4KC thing and then renaming it and putting different settings and all that happy noise.
What you're doing is the workaround. What I'm telling you is the correct standard way of doing it. It's a workaround to try to mess with the settings on the old profile, which was done to totally different standards. The correct way of doing it is to take the existing profile at 4 and just make it 7.5, and then only one thing has to be changed. That's the correct way of doing it. And it is very difficult to adjust that mixer pot to a given setting. That's why I'm saying, number one, you don't know which one to adjust. Number two, it's very, very hard to adjust it to an exact setting, so it's just better not to mess with that.
Yeah, see, I thought that was the same for all bands. I didn't realize that every setting had to be changed. I got an appreciation again for that. You were commenting about how much you dislike my making changes because it requires about 24 other changes of settings, you know, hit, save, apply, and all that happy stuff. And by the way, we have the Drifter? Yeah, I think that's what Vic calls it, the Drifter. He's referring to that carrier that used to be wobbly. He calls it crummy.
Into IRJ.
I was going to turn down that volume a little. So you don't have to have an imperfect rendition of her voice audio. I'm really getting an appreciation for all the extra fiddling around that you have to go through. But I'm telling you, after spending about 6 hours at least fighting with the oscilloscope and looking on the internet and this and that, I really think I might have gotten the proper settings whereby the Audacity recordings are turning out, the level is right, the oscilloscope is happy, the CPDR meter is happy. So if that's all true, it's just a matter of time to go through all the different profiles and get them set right. Over.
Yeah. Really, I'm seriously urging you, the easy way to do that, and the way to do that without messing up your recordings or making it sloppy so one profile has 3 dB more gain than the other on the recordings, which would be so annoying. The safe and easy and standard way to do that is to take the one that you've perfected, the 4 kilohertz test one, the one we did with the white noise, and just clone that into all the other transmit bandwidths.
okay, I'll do that. I can do it now, I guess. What do I just switch on to 4 and then rename it or something? I forgot how to do that.
Okay, you go to the transmit tab. While you're in, and then while you're in the transmit tab, you switch to that test profile, the one I created. I assume it's still called test. You can save it under any name, though. What you do is just save and then specify a name. And then after you do that, then change the high frequency limit on the transmit filter to 7499 and save it again under a new name, SSB 7.5K or Test 7.5K, whatever you want to call it. Then change it to 5999 and save it as SSB 6K or Test 6K and whatever. And that way all the other settings, the mixer settings, the mic gain setting, the DX setting, the compander setting, every single setting that's tied to transmit profile will be identical to the one you've perfected. And the only difference will be the transmit bandwidth, which is what you want, WB4AIO.
Okay, I did it, and it seemingly worked. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm still down. I must have done it wrong. I was afraid that would happen. Let me put it back up again. Okay, hello. Hello, Betty. Let me try. Hello, hello. That's a little bit too hot, maybe. Probably sounds good on your end, though, but I'm violating 0. Let me go to 28. 28. Yeah, okay, now I'm not really violating too much. Let me hit 27. There's 27. Yeah, now I'm definitely not violating anymore. And I'll try to save this profile under this new one. Let me look it up. Test, here it is. Okay. Yes. Enter profile name. I already put it in. 1 second. T-E-S-T. T-E-S-T, SSB 7.5K, okay. Are you sure you want to overwrite? Yes, which I probably don't, but okay. I guess something isn't right because I have to make the microphone gain setting still 7 higher, over.
No, you did something wrong, Mark. Go back to 4K. Just go back to the 4K profile. Talk to me in 4K. Start there.
I'm in 4K.
It's 4K.
I'm in 4K.
Okay, now save that profile right now. Save it under another name. And then talk to me.
Okay, I'm talking to you now, and the CPDR is working perfectly, even at the same mic setting, which is 20. Life is good in America. Don't be harsh on me. Being up all night, I'm not totally mentally straight. But that's okay. I'm really happy to be talking here, and I'll be telling you stories about my AM endeavors. Like you said, maybe we could even try it. Over.
Yeah, well, 75 is fading a bit, so maybe we'll have to switch to 40. But, okay, now you've saved it under a new name. You're talking to me on the basically the same settings, but it's under a new name, correct? And that's the one you're on now.
That is correct. It's under the new name, Test 7.5K. And everything is beautiful. Yeah, that 4.0, I'm glad we set it up the way we did. And now I can just export it all over the world and make this world a better place. By the way, I was telling you about the wobbly carrier. I don't know if you see it, but it's been here the whole time. And boy, is it progressing rapidly today. Usually on Liberty, it just gradually goes. Maybe in a half hour's time, it'll move 400 hertz down band. Well, today, it's moving up in frequency. Just in the time we've been talking, it must have moved 600 hertz. When I unkey, I can tell you the frequency. I was going to tell it to you before, but it's already changed. Over.
It's not audible at all here. I don't see it, nor do I hear it. Okay, now what you do is, without changing anything else, just change the high setting on the transmit filter to 7499. Just change the high setting to 7499, then save the profile again, and and overwrite it. Save it under the same name that it is now, after you change the high filter to 7499. And then hit OK and or apply, and then you will have a new filter with all the same settings, same gain, same everything, just a different bandwidth. In other words, in the little sub box under the transmit tab where it says transmit filter, there's a high and low setting. The low is zero right now, the high is probably $39.99. Change the high, don't change anything else, just change the high to 7499 and hit apply, and then save the profile under the same name it has now, and you'll have a new profile with identical settings to your new 4K profile, but it will be a new 7.5K profile. So that process should clone it. You should not have to change the levels at all. WB4AIO.
Okay, that is done, and you'll be able to tell me if it's true on the receiving end. I can see on the transmitting end it must be true. Looking at the transmitted bandwidth, it's wider. I just clicked the button, show transmit filter on display, but I'm not seeing that at all. For some reason, it's not lighting up yellow. I can just look at the bandwidth, though, and tell. Maybe you have to check it first before you key the push talk. By the way, that wobbly carrier has already moved again. I had to re-notch it. It's really moving fast. And by the way, it's taken the reverse direction. It's now going down in frequency.
Okay. Well, I can't hear it at all, so I'm just ignoring that. Now what you need to do is turn your bass up on the Behringer because it sounds kind of excessively bright.
1986 down from RF sub-zero, that's where it is right now, roughly 2 kilohertz almost. Okay, I think the Behringer is up pretty damn high, but, well, not for this, though. You're right, with wider fidelity. Let me do that. Okay, there's an extra 3 decibels. What do you have to say about that? I'm living life in a really risque fashion.
Well, that is an improvement, but I would bring it all the way up to zero. I would bring the bass up to flat.
Ah, that's dangerous to do, especially when you talk to people with low standards on this very frequency. Okay, there's more bass. Over.
Yeah, give me a little talk. Is that 0 dB?
Well, I found that turning the pot, the circular one is not as good as letting it lower and just accentuating the frequencies under 100 hertz by doing the slider. So I've been doing the slider. When I said it was 3 dB, I was reading it directly from there. It's now 6 dB hotter on low frequency bass response than it was. If necessary, yes, I can ever so slightly crack the other one too, clockwise. Over.
Yeah, where is the pot, the one on the channel, where is that set?
Fully counterclockwise for bass.
Yeah, that's why it sounds so thin. You need you really shouldn't run it like that. That's there's not much for that slider to work with when you do that.
Yeah, I know, but LibertyNet people love it. But I
well, if you're going to have a good sound on ESSB, you can't really run it that way.
Well, I'll let you get me straightened out for ESSB. I'll do that now with you. And then for LibertyNet, I guess I'll have to put it back. That carrier's still moving around again. Now it's coming back up. Boy, is it mentally ill today. I'll give you an extra notch, and we'll home in on what you think is good bass.
Well, start at zero. Just start at flat.
This, no doubt, has to be excessive. This is a drastic measure, but I gave you what you wanted. This is at the 12 noon position.
Yeah, now it sounds good. This is, now it sounds the way it should sound.
You must be kidding.
No, I know I'm right, and I'm listening to it, and I'm recording it, too. You'll be able to hear it.
Well, thank you. That will be helpful to hear myself. And what about LibertyNet? I can leave it this way, or should I put it back? In other words, if I go to 4 kilohertz, is it going to muddy me up?
Well, of course, that's a matter of opinion, but maybe for ASSB or AM work, you should leave it exactly where it is now, flat. And then maybe for LibertyNet, put it halfway between where it is now and where you've been running it, and I think it'll sound better.
Okay, that's a deal. I'm really glad that you're helping me like this. I really worked hard on my own throughout the night doing all these other things, but this part of it, I really needed to rely on you. You have the golden tone ears and brain and all that. Looking at the Duro here, and it's still happy. I'm modulating it as it should. The Aphex is bouncing happily, too. How about the Behringer? Yep, Behringer 3. I don't know if you saw the email from Kenneth of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, about the FCC finding Behringer like $1.4 million or something for their devices that were doing the Samsung TV dance. That syndrome of putting out RF pollution. I was going to put in my email that it makes sense that they would pick on the Germans because the Germans are evil white people. They're hated. And they would never do that to the South Koreans. Plus, I have some other experience I could tell you about from where I worked, why South Koreans get their way. Germans probably wouldn't play the game of extortion, but the South Koreans certainly do. It's a way of life for them. When I was working there, I got a phone call in the middle of the night. I mean, really in the middle of the night, like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was a Korean that I worked with. And he was drunk off his rear, apparently, up in New Brunswick, New Jersey, north of here, about 25 miles. And this guy called and said that there's this drunk Korean laying in a ditch pointing to his wristwatch, and your phone number was in it. So if you get here within a half hour, you can pick up your buddy. Otherwise, I'm calling the cops. So anyway, I got there in the nick of time, picked him up, and left. But somehow the cops did get called anyway, and they stormed this bar, and they rounded up a whole bunch of illegal aliens. And anyway, a ton of them were these South Koreans. So anyway, suddenly everything went silent. They didn't get prosecuted, just vanished. After the real big scene of cop cars and INS was there and everything. Turns out, I found out why. Some American dollars changed hands. I guess it started off in yuan, but ended up in American dollars. And it just made the problem vanish.
Ah, well, that's typical for America. Maybe it's typical for certain entities in foreign countries to supply the corrupt bribes, but it's certainly typical Washington regime ethics to be corrupt. Of course, they parade themselves around as if they're moral and upright and can judge people's character, whether or not they can have amateur licenses and things of that nature. They pose as moral, ethical people, but in reality, the whole regime is shot full of corruption. This is WB4AIO, and Marty, your signal sounds excellent now. It's truly a good SSB signal for ESSB quality. It sounds really worthy of a high-quality broadcast station, so you're doing great. I think you're influenced too much by people who are listening on very narrow receivers, and you just turn that bass down all the time. Maybe for people with hearing loss or people with very narrow 2.4 kilohertz receivers, maybe it's okay to do that, but when you really want to take advantage of the quality that transceiver of yours, that software-defined transceiver, really has, it's really a shame to cut the low end out, because the low end is rich and deep and beautiful. It's not excessive. It just sounds good. It sounds real. It sounds high fidelity. It sounds like WGY Schenectady, WB4AIO.
Into IRJ.
Oh, now once again, is the volume... That should have come over the air fine. I'm looking at the slider. It was up enough. Well, WGY Schenectady is nothing to sneeze at, so if I can be like they used to be, I'm proud of that. And I'm really glad, really, that you talked me into making this change. I'm glad I wasn't stubborn and I cooperated. I do completely differentiate between talking to you and talking to yin-yangs with low standards. And I still didn't get to tell three people that my complete restart of the PC was totally unnecessary. You know, they had me chasing my tail, insisting that there was something wrong, you're all bassy and all this and that, and the only one of the bunch you fixed that problem, in quotation marks, was Vic, by cutting everything below 400 hertz. That's the solution. I will say, though, that he needs it, so I guess I do have to make that compromise for liberty, and as painful it is for me to do, you know, when I'm there, it's not just there, it's on the telephone. When I talk to him on the telephone, if I have this setting like it is now, I absolutely guarantee to you, he will never, ever, ever be able to understand me right off the get-go. I mean, no chance at all. Only if I put the treble to max and the mid-range to max and turn the bass all the way off on the rotaries on channel one, then he can hear me. I kid you not, we've gone through this test a couple times now, and this last phone call, I finally decided it has to be that way. Over.
Okay. Well, it's not surprising considering the situation. Limited bandwidth telephone network and somebody with some hearing loss on the other end, so it's understandable. You have to be flexible, but if you want to run good quality, in fact, I would. If it were me, even running narrow bandwidth, I wouldn't cut the bass. I run my audio exactly the same. The only difference between my settings is the high end. There's no other difference. I keep everything else exactly the same. When I run 4 kilohertz or 3.4 kilohertz or 3.5 kilohertz transmit bandwidth, my mid-range and low-end are exactly the same as they are in this setting. There's no difference at all. But I guess if you wanted to compromise it even further to help the people with small speakers and hearing loss and old-fashioned non-SDR receivers, then you can cut the bass. But maybe you shouldn't cut it quite as much as you've been cutting it, but whatever your choice, you know, it's you have that flexibility. That's what the knob is for. WB4AIO.
Yes, the Flex has flexibility. Wonder how they ever picked a name. Speaking of flexibility, that the wobbly carrier is flexible in its ability to go away and come in back. And right now it's gone away. It just vanished. In fact, there's a Vicism I have somewhere about that. He says something like the carrier was progressing and plodding along, and it suddenly disappeared because it had no place to go or something like that. It was pretty funny what Vic said.
I wonder if that is a local thing to you, because I do not hear even a trace of it here.
It's gone now, but it was there.
Yeah, but I mean, I never heard a trace of it, so I wonder if it's local in your neighborhood.
I think it's not in my neighborhood, but it's apparently more local to me, you know, on a bigger scale. Oh, another thing I did last night, I researched our coordinates in our magnetic declination correction factor. In Johnstown, Pennsylvania, you're at 10.0 degrees exactly off. You have to, whatever your compass says, you have to go 10.0 degrees more to the east to get true north. It's pointing, you know, inaccurately a little too far west in Johnstown by exactly 10.0 degrees. Here in Jackson, New Jersey, it is about 12.7, but it's easy to say 13, you know, for round numbers. And our latitudes are ever so slightly different, and of course that throws it off into the equation. We're different by 0.2. I'm at 40.12, and you're at like 40.0 or 39.98 or something. I forgot, but we're like very, very close. You're ever slightly more north. But mostly, of course, you're west. You're, let's see, I'm negative 74 points, I forgot, 298, I think it is. Yeah, 74.298, say 74.3 negative. You are, I think, 4 degrees less. I think you're right around 70. You'd be more. I take that back. Yeah, you would be the other direction. It would be like 78, something like that. I could look it up, but those numbers are pretty close. Over.
Yeah. I think if I start that ASMAP program, it'll tell me, because not because it knows, but just because I programmed it in there. I'd have to look for it, though. It's somewhere in the menu. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I know where I am, roughly. The gray line has passed us. The gray line is touching Minnesota now.
Yeah, that's a really neat map you put me onto. I wish on Google Earth or those Google Maps they had latitude and longitude listed. I mean, if they do, I'm not seeing it, because if I could look up my address there and get the information, that would be helpful, because once again, I went to QRZ.com, and I've already bitched to you about it lying about the distance between my house and Pat's and other places, too, that are nearby, and it's apparently lying about my coordinates here, the latitude and longitude, because when I stick them into the official government calculator by NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The declination turns out to be not exactly the same as what's listed in their tabular form of city, listing as to what it is. And I know it does change every year, and it's in fact always changing. Heck, it's in my lifetime changed, I think, about 1 degree. And it also it goes two ways. It changes both in longitude and latitude. Both factors change. I was reading up on it. Right now it's centered, I think, west of Victoria Island, up there in Canada, the west coast of Canada, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. Wales. It's Wales Island. It's in the northwest part of Wales Island. I didn't see that on a map, but I did see the bigger one I said before, that island. But that's roughly where it is these days.
Yeah, okay. According to the figures I put into ASMAP earlier, I'm at 40.2703 north, 40.2703 degrees north, I should say, and 78.8667 degrees west. So roughly 40.3 and 78.9, approximately.
I'm glad you straightened me out on that. I was correct in about the 40. By the way, Carrier has returned. I'm now notching it.
Anyway, I think you can get latitude and longitude from Google Maps. There's a way to do that, and it's accurate. WB4AIO.
Yeah, I was trying to be funny there. I was calling the carrier Carrier, like it's a French name maybe. But speaking of that, being that I was messing with the oscilloscope, and you and I had that talk about, I'm trying to think the French pronunciation. It's not Lissajous, of course. It's something like Lissajous. Lissajous. I think that's how you're supposed to pronounce it. I did a check on that, the proper pronunciation, and I think that's how it's said. You could do it better because you know French. Does that sound about right, Lissajous?
No, at the end of it is not Jean. It says Jou, Lissajous.
That's right, Lissajous, Lissajous. That's right. I remember it was way different than Lissajous. It was way different than that, Lissajous. And the accent was on the list part, the beginning. And you're right. It's not what I was observing last night involving my AM signal, the carrier, and all that stuff. It's really what you said, you know, putting two signals in the different channels. And it's back to college physics lab class. It's that fundamental, you know, 2-to-3 ratio. What does it look like? Believe it or not, that was one of the questions on my test back then. I think they wanted us to know 5-to-3 and, you know, 1-to-1. Of course, that's super easy. And, you know, provided that it's phased properly. If it's off, then instead of being a circle, it would be an oval.
Okay. Very good, Marty. I don't use Lissajous patterns on my scope. I just use the wave envelope pattern. I've learned over time to read it and know what it means in terms of audio, in terms of RF, in terms of saturation of an amplifier, in terms of modulation percentage of an AM signal, and all that stuff. And when you first look at a wave envelope pattern, it's very confusing. But over the years, you learn what it's telling you. You learn how to set the sweep rate so it gives you the most information. And it's a very, very familiar tool to me. And I don't like operating a transmitter without an oscilloscope. The audio oscilloscope that's built into the computer is nice, but it doesn't go up to RF frequencies, so I have to use a real-world cathode ray oscilloscope to do what I want. And so far, this SM220 is doing a good job. I'm going to sign off of this frequency, but I'm going to give you a call up in the AM window on AM on 40 meters around 9 o'clock. But I'm going to go get a little bite to eat. I'm going to retune the antenna system and retune the amplifier for the top end of 40 meters. And right around 9 o'clock, I will call you around the low end of the AM window, and I hope that propagation is with us so that the 250 miles that separate us will be propagatable on the 7 megahertz band. So anyway, you're sounding really good right now. The profile you have set and with the settings on the Behringer mixer are such that you could be proud to go on 3630 or 14178 and talk to the guys who are into ESSB. You could be proud of the signal you're running right now. And I think if you run similar audio settings in the AM mode, you'll also get good results from that. So we'll check out the AM settings if the propagation is with us. If not, we'll have to try another day. I am running out of time, though. I've got mucho deadlines and mucho things I must be doing. Lots of work to do. But you'll enjoy this recording because it illustrates clearly the differences between the response settings you adjusted there. N2IRJ in central New Jersey, not far from the salt flats of the RCA Proving Grounds, where so many HF antennas were invented in the early days of radio. This is WB4AIO from near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania. High in the Allegheny Mountains, saying 73 for now, and I'll see you in a few minutes on 40 meters, WB4AIO.
You read my mind. You read the thoughts of other men. You have ESP. I was going to suggest going up to 40 because this ionospheric link is dwindling. We're running out of rope. And I guess my signal to you is the same. That's why you thought of doing it. And I'm going to have to say goodbye to that wobbly carrier. And I think you're right. It must be kind of local because it's propagating during daylight now just seemingly as well as it does at night during the Liberty Net. So I'll go up there. Maybe I'll park it on 7280. And that'll hopefully be okay. And, you know, away from people up band who are maybe doing AM. So you can, you know, maneuver around, navigate frequency-wise. Frequency agility. I will give you my sign-off, which actually came up before and I did, it wasn't keyed down, so here goes.
Into IRJ.
And we'll find out how that sounds on your recording, too. And I'll be a QSO up there. I'll get a bite to eat, too, and then you can give me a call up there.
Thank you.
just by some rare fluke, if you're up here on 40 meters, I'm on 7285, and there's slop bucketing activity either side, and so an AM activity up above, so that's why I parked it here. I'm going to go get my food, too, and then I'll be back. And if you're in the kitchen, maybe you're hearing me. Maybe I'm close enough to 7280. I didn't want to transmit down there because there's a queue, so N2IRJ standing by.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice pitter-pattering. I announced my intention to use 7285 a few minutes ago, and yet someone now has moved in closer on the bottom end. I brought my food with me. I know I'm 3 minutes early, talking with my mouth full.
Test 1-2. Hello, testing. 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9-10. Hello, testing. N2IRJ, why don't you zero beat my frequency? We're too close to WA3GMS up the band. WA3GMS is on
7-2-9.
N2IRJ, N2IRJ, can you zero beat this frequency? This is WB4AIO, Oedipus, calling your station and carefully listening.
I did so, Kevin. All is well. You're on 7283 kilohertz amplitude modulation.
Move off frequency, Evan.
Yeah, the band is full of chatter, both AM and sideband chatter off to the side. So give me some more talk. I want to optimize the bandwidth and get the most fidelity I can out of you. So go ahead and give me a transmission.
Transmission commences. I'll have you know that the wobbler from 75 meters pursued me. It's here again. It's now removed 726 hertz below our fundamental, 7283 kilohertz. Go down 726 hertz, that's where it is. So far, this one seems to be stable. I think there might be a whole family of these critters on the loose. So anyway, I didn't realize that there was an AM QSO a little too close to us on the top end. That's why I was 2 KC higher. And I guess I've maybe spoken long enough for you to be able to get your settings right. Over.
Yeah, you're actually doing very well. Considering that the band is kind of full of chatter right now, we're only 7 KC down from another high-fidelity AM station, so I hope we're not giving Joe or his group any trouble. But I didn't want to be just 5 KC away. I always think that 5 kHz is way too close for good quality AM. 5 kHz spacing is actually annoyingly close. 10 kHz is pretty good. 7 is kind of a compromise, but right now we have to compromise. Or we're not going to be able to talk. Because the morning crowd is on 40 meters, what can I say? But your fidelity sounds good. I tuned you in both in the, after I optimized the bandwidth for both standard AM and synchronous AM. I gave a critical listen to both modes, and you're sounding fine. So your fidelity is good. Your modulation percentage is sounds like what it should be. And you're producing an effective and very pleasant sounding AM signal. I hope I'm doing the same. I'm running a little bit less than 200 watts carrier output. I still haven't changed the output network in this amplifier to optimize the loading, so I don't have quite the 200 kilowatt PEP. It's a little bit less than that on this band, so I have to run the carrier power slightly below 200 watts, but it's producing a good 180 watt carrier. And I hope it's detectable with good quality at your end. Right now I'm listening to you with a bandwidth of a little over 7,500 hertz on the lower side band and a bandwidth of 4 kilohertz on the upper side band. which gives me an overall bandwidth of 7600 hertz with a little bit of roll-off above 4KC because of the imbalance of the sideband. But anyway, there you go. To IRJ in the Salt Flats of Central New Jersey, this is WB4AIO reminding you that you can't spell ham without AM, and you can't spell radio without AIO.
My lower sideband is about 4,200 hertz, the upper one around 3,800 hertz. And yeah, you're sounding good, but the signal isn't strong enough, and the side competition also is detracting from the overall greatness of what it could be. But our time will come, and I'll have you know that I really, really worked hard and got these settings to be just right to satisfy the oscilloscope. It made a believer of me. A person is naked without an oscilloscope in setting up AM properly, unless they have a rice box and they just want to have everything preset and dialed in, and they just gradually up the drive a little and leave it at that, and they'll be under-modulated and narrow-banded and all of the other problems associated with that. This is set up right. I followed your instructions, which I have a question about. I'll ask you in short order, but I ended up setting it up that way. Then I verified it with another method. It required a different time base on the oscilloscope, and it's the one I told you about down on 75 meters where you look at the sinusoid, positive ones and the negative ones, so to speak, and the carrier in the middle there. Well anyway, what you do is you set it up in such a way that there's the carrier is essentially diminished to the point of being just a line on the x-axis, and then you have the sinusoid above and the sinusoid below and so on and so forth. Maybe you get about 7 repetitions of that, and you can look at them all, and they're all identical in amplitude, and they're hollow dot sections are all the same looking. And you know, if you go too far and modulate it too much with a balanced modulator, which is what I have here, that's when you start seeing an extra bulge appear between those sinusoids. If you go the other direction, then the carrier starts getting fat because you're under modulated. So I have it set at the sweet spot. Over.
Yeah, well, even when you're fully modulated, the carrier's still there. It's just that it's fully modulated upward and fully modulated downward, so you see the audio waveform fully superimposed on the carrier. But the carrier, of course, is always there. But yeah, you have the sweet spot, and it sounds good. I listen to you in the standard AM detector, the virtual diode detector mode in Power SDR, and you sound very, very similar to the way you sound in the synchronous detector mode. So I would say you have your audio levels very close to optimum. Perhaps I could get even more critical of the details of your audio if the signal-to-noise ratio were better. But the signal-to-noise ratio is good, and it's good enough for me to tell that your quality and your density of modulation are all totally acceptable. You can leave your AM settings just as they are. Don't change them. Everything is fine. You'll hear this on the recording. It's all one recording, which I'll send to you. So you can evaluate it, what you sound like at this end of it.
Well, we just got a very powerful invading slop bucketer on our upper sideband. Boy, that's not very nice. He wasn't there before, and we've had the frequency for a while. And I will tell you now the rest of the story. The
Into IRJ.
Thank you. You have a sweet voice. Took your advice about sideband and set it up using the CPDR. But boy, you sure can't use that approach when you're setting up AM. You need an oscilloscope, a good one, and somebody who understands how to read it. And that's why I'm going to ask you this question, back to the original method we had discussed on the phone. You know, how you stage the oscilloscope so that you can see a carrier, say one graticule in width each way, you know, a positive and a negative. So overall it's two graticules wide. That we'll say that's the carrier. So if you modulated that fully, there would be one more graticule added on each side. Instead of one on each side, there'd be two on each side. That would be 100% modulation, right? Over. You mean you're not hearing me? I'm here talking, and I'm putting that power over.
Well, I heard that transmission, but when I turned it over to you before, you never transmitted.
Oh, man, don't tell me my rig's flaking out on me. Yeah, I gave a whole transmission. It'll be on the Audacity recording. You'll get to hear it there. Well, I'll happily repeat, unless I'm so sleepy I forgot to key the mic or something, but I don't think so. What I was saying is... The method of reading the oscilloscope, I need to go over the way we talked about on the phone in the wee morning hours. And basically, that was to put the time base setting and adjust the amplitude also so that the carrier would be represented by two graticules. It would be centered, you know, sliced in half. Well, there would be half of it above and half of it below, which would be exactly one graticule each way. That's the carrier. Then when you modulate it, if you go an extra graticule each way, which would make a total of four altogether, that would equal 100% modulation. I'm going in steps. If you say that is correct, then I'll go into step number two. Over. Did you copy, Kevin?
I said, yes, Marty, that is correct.
Okay, I heard you that time. Yes, it's correct. Okay, next. When I put a single tone into the carrier to modulate it, what I see is a... sinusoid riding on the carrier, and it dips down a little bit lower than what the carrier originally was. Instead of making it up to be a full graticule in the positive direction of the carrier where it used to be, it now only goes up to maybe 0.9, maybe even as low as 0.8. And then, of course, we have a new amplitude riding on top there. So here's my question. Do you define the new carrier point by the root where that sine wave goes down, the absolute minimum? Or there's like a little eighth of an inch zone of like overlap where it's real bright green? And, you know, that would, I guess you could say might be used as a reference point too. But I used the lower root, and the reason why is it would be, create a factor of safety. In other words, if I estimated it to be there, which I'm hoping is the right way, the way you're supposed to do it anyway, but the reason I based it on that is I figured that, if I did it that way, I'd be erring on the side of under-modulating and not over-modulating. Back to you.
Well, I'm not sure that I understand your question, frankly. There is no new carrier point. The carrier point in a properly operating AM transmitter will not change under modulation. So if the carrier is one graticule, then you just measure how low the trough of the audio sine wave goes, and if it goes down to zero, to the zero point, then that's 100% negative modulation. If it goes up to 2 graticules on the positive side of the audio sine wave, then that's 100% positive modulation. When the carrier is modulated, you can't really tell easily by looking at it where the carrier level is. You have to turn off the modulation to see where the carrier level is. But it really should not change in a properly operating AM transmitter.
I'll tell you this. I researched it on the internet. I didn't want to interfere with your beauty rest in the middle of the night, middle of the morning. And here's what I found, that it's true. It does change. You're saying it does not, but on all of the photographs posted there, the phenomenon that I experienced is there. In color, even. It's minor, but it's there. Like I said, instead of being 1 graticule, it maybe falls down to 0.9 when it's modulated, but then the peak picks up too. And I set everything to be perfect both ways, and they were consistent. So that was like double insurance that I must have done it right. And the other method is what I said to you down band. When I got done with that, I verified another way. I set a different time base and all that, and I looked at the carrier as just a infinitesimally small piece of tissue paper on the x-axis, and then the sinusoids above and below. And like I said, if you overmodulate it, you start getting a blurb in between the sinusoids. It starts growing. It's little at first. And then if you go the other way, then the carrier gets fatter. It's no longer a piece of tissue paper. And, you know, there gets to be, undermodulation. And this website I found also showed what it would look like if I were using plate modulation. In that case, it would have been overmodulated if those peaks were separated by that tissue paper by maybe an eighth of an inch or something on the oscilloscope screen. So I guess you already know all this, but yeah, I could send you that website and then maybe you would understand where I'm coming from.
Into IRJ.
Well, you've got some RF in your system, because when she comes on, I can hear a tremendous tremendous echo. N2IRJ, WB4AIO. Well, I understand everything you're saying, but in a properly operating AM transmitter, the carrier level does not change with modulation. Maybe in an improperly operated AM transmitter, the carrier level changes with modulation. That's called carrier shift, negative carrier shift. And often that happens when you have a plate-modulated AM transmitter where the modulator and the final amplifier are running off the same power supply, and the power supply regulation is relatively poor, and when the modulator draws more current, the plate voltage on the final amplifier sags, and so the carrier level sags a little bit when you modulate it. But that is improper operation. What I said was, in a properly operating AM transmitter, the carrier level will not change with modulation. Over.
Okay. Are we talking sustained modulation, I guess? In other words, I was putting in a sustained tone. I tried 1,500 hertz. I tried 1,000. I tried 800. And I think 400 was in channel 2 of that scope program, but it was hard to really track. So anyway, I think we're on the same page. The numbers came out, and I've since put my headset on. So hopefully there won't be that problem anymore about hearing the ID come back through. Let's try it here.
Into IRJ. Into IRJ.
Okay, that was with headsets on and the external speakers off. Over.
Yeah, that did sound a lot better. I think her level is a little bit low, though. I think you need to pop her up more, either with the fader built into MP3 direct cut or maybe with the fader on the Behringer mixer, but her level is a bit low. And I do understand what you're saying. I think you're confusing the modulation of the carrier with the carrier level. But even when you're 100% modulated for the tone, the carrier level never changes. The carrier level is actually the same. Now, the overall signal level changes at an audio rate. The sinusoid or whatever waveform you feed into the transmitter modulates upward and downward in accordance with the shape of the modulating waveform. And it looks like the carrier is being cut off at 100% negative modulation, but in reality, the carrier is always there and the carrier is unchanging, no matter whether you can see it or not on the scope.
Okay, into IRJ returning with an upping of the CW slider. Here goes.
Into IRJ. Into IRJ.
It is light. It's only hitting, I think, on negative 6 dB on CPDR. Let me try again.
Into IRJ.
Yeah, I could make it hotter. The only thing is, if I make it that hot, then NISA will be too hot. It's the same slider, over.
I'll then leave the slider alone and just up the control on MP3 direct cut, up the output level control on that.
It's already set to maximum, and Audacity is also set to maximum. Maybe there's some menu I could go into and change something there.
Well, you could go into your audio mixer and change the setting for MP3 direct cut and use it.
I'd be glad to do that. I just don't know how to do that. Guess what? The band is going out on us. I can barely hear you now.
I said right-click on the speaker icon. Right-click on the speaker icon and select volume mixer.
Oh my, it's way down. Holy heck, I can probably put it up, and then I'll have to reduce the Behringer, put it back where it was. Okay, now let me do voice ID.
Into IRJ. Into IRJ.
Well, it's better, but believe it or not, it's still only at negative 5 dB. It's still not bumping up against zero. Could you hear a difference in amplitude?
It's much better now. It's definitely much better now. But there's no reason why you couldn't adjust it so that it's hitting the same level as your voice approximately.
I can do that for this QSO, but when NISA comes on, it's going to be too hot for her. I've already cranked up the rotary knob instead of the sliders to full graticules. Here goes.
Into IRJ. Into IRJ.
For some reason, it's still at negative 5 dB, even though I cranked it up even more.
Well, don't judge it by the companion meter. Judge it by the Durow. In other words, you can set the Behringer roughly to where you think NISA will be the correct level on the Durow output level meter, which is measuring the output of your mixer. And so set all the settings that you think NISA will be approximately correct when she calls in. And then adjust the volume mixer for MP3 direct cut, and MP3 direct cut only, so that the ID matches the level that you expect on the drill. And everything will be hunky dory. This will be good, and the ID will be good.
I intend to work with that. I'm going to look at my modulation as I'm speaking now on the Durow, and it's doing just what it should do. I'm now going to put on the ID and watch the Durow, and I'll let you know what happens.
Into IRJ.
Believe it or not, it's telling me that it's identical to my own voice. Well, mostly both. Let me try it a couple more times.
Into IRJ. Into IRJ. Into IRJ.
Okay, it's actually stronger. When N is pronounced, it actually hits a red peak on Duro, although the average doesn't get there. When she says two, the average gets to a momentary red blip, the first LED, but the peak does not. So that's a pretty neat test. It will be consistent, that recording. I can always test it that way. First, the N gives me a peak, and then second, the two, saying two, gives me a hot, the red average, just a blip so much, ever so little of the first LED. Over. I have another idea. What if I let the settings alone the way they are right now? When NISA gets on, I just decrease the Skype volume in Skype. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. That would probably work as long as Skype doesn't constantly mess with that setting. That should work okay.
I'm glad you brought up that subject of messing. I meant to tell you on the phone, and I'm glad I can tell you here now, even though I hope you're hearing me better than I'm hearing you. I have proof now, not that I didn't have it before, that this PC changes things without my permission, or at least tries to sometimes. It gets halfway there. Sometimes it fully succeeds. Here's what I'm talking about. I think it was yesterday when I went into these transmit profiles and all that. You know, we did the 4 kilohertz change and all that. I was looking at that. Yeah, the test one, you know, TEST, the one we made. And I look and I look again. I say, what the heck is going on here? And it was set at 2900 even for the high. And the low is at 300 even. And I never put in even numbers. There's no way that I would have ever input that. And plus, of course, I remembered that I didn't. And finally, I would never do it anyway because I would never put an improper bandwidth in there like that in two places, no less. The high and the low cuts were wrong. So I was going to change, and I figured I'm going to try something. I'm going to try... I forget what I clicked on there, and it goes, do you want to save these changes? And I said, no. And then it reverted back. So it seems like the software was trying to trick me into saying yes, and then it would have forever cemented it in there. But it only made it halfway without my final click on giving it permission to overwrite and do that. You know, it didn't happen, thank heavens, but it almost happened. I mean, I saw the window there, and it was saying 2,900 hertz, upper frequency limit. And I guarantee you, I wouldn't have never put that in for 4,000 hertz. And it did it on its own.
Well, I don't think you can blame your operating system for that. It sounds like your other power SDR switched to its default profile. I don't know what triggered that. Without realizing it, or maybe some kind of software glitch. Power SDR is sort of a work in progress, so it does occasionally have glitches, although I have to say that you have 10 times the number of glitches with Power SDR than I ever have. I get an occasional glitch, but you have 10 times as many as I do, and what the underlying reason for that is, I don't know. Maybe it's all the experimentation you do. You stress it, you take it to the limits, you try things out that it's not expecting, and maybe you introduce these problems. Or maybe it's not that at all. Maybe it's something like RF getting into your PC and corrupting things, because you do have a high RF situation there with your setup. So any of those things is possible, but what it sounds like to me is those settings came from the default transmit profile, which cannot be deleted. Into IRJ WB4AIO on AM.
It sounds that way to me too, that it was a default. Now, I didn't click on default, but somehow internally it decided to do that, just like sometimes it decides to give me Louis Armstrong. And yet other times it doesn't. Has a damn mind of its own. And speaking of heartaches from unintended software switches and glitches, I had to, as a child, watch those TV commercials, and I learned about the heartbreak of psoriasis. And now there's the heartbreak of FM. You can't adjust the deviation on this flex unless you know how to program. I guess if we could find out that, we could change it and have high fidelity FM, or at least, you know, nudge it up a kilohertz or so on receive and transmit both. And then if that's not bad enough, after first the psoriasis and then the FM deviation, then get a load of this, a more heartbreak. I last night discovered that it's a myth that this flex can put out 150% asymmetrical, you know, modulation, positive peaks. It turns out that no matter what DeRose, no matter what settings on CRL or microphone gain or anything, it pretty much maxes out at 120. It can't go above that. The only way that I could ever so little exceed that for a split second in time is if I did the or the clicking right there. Clicking my tongue like that. You taught me that trick. Then I can get an instantaneous blip up to 150. Of course, the CRL is limiting it and clamping and preventing it from going too far, which is good. But this thing, I think, intrinsically is throttled back. And again, it's another heartbreak. It's not fair because I could utilize it appropriately. And I looked it up on the web, and they said that the FCC says that the legal limit is 125% of asymmetry in an AM modulated signal. So maybe the flexologists once again knee-jerk to that political correctness. Over.
N2IRJWB4AIO. Hold on just a second, Marie. Can you hold on just a minute? I'll be right back.
Yes, I'll be standing by here.
Okay, N2IRJ, this is WB4AIO. Well, the 125% limit does not apply to amateur radio. That only applies to AM broadcast stations. It does not apply to amateur radio at all. And I disagree with you. I think the Flex can produce all kinds of asymmetrical modulation. If you have it in your program material, it will reproduce it. The only limit is you cannot achieve that unless you reduce the current level is set to 25 watts. Then you cannot achieve more than 100 watts PEP with that 25 watts. The software signal to be in terms of positive peak modulation, it will clip off at 100% positive peak modulation if you're running 25 watts. However, if you're running 10 watts of carrier, the positive peak capability will be much higher. So it is limited by the maximum PEP capability of the final amplifier. If you want to run more than 100% positive peak modulation on AM, then you have to reduce your carrier output to below, well below the 25 watt mark. So that may be an explanation for what you were seeing. When I was at your station, I was, with my voice anyway, I was seeing an easy 140, 150% positive peak modulation the way I had it set up. So there are arguments, though, that really you get just as much loudness at the other end with symmetrical audio, and that's the argument that why some people use phase rotators like the Kahn symmetry to more evenly distribute the asymmetrical waveform of the typical male voice, so that the male voice loses its asymmetry after passing through the phase rotator. Then you get pretty much exactly the same loudness, but you can modulate the transmitter 100% negative don't need all that extra positive capability. But then again, there are other people who argue that you can force asymmetry through audio processing and tolerate a small amount of distortion, maybe even a moderate amount of distortion, and generate asymmetrical waveforms that are rather extreme and get extra loudness. I think it's good to have some good positive peak capability for the headroom, but I don't really believe in pushing it extremely hard. I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think it buys you that much in terms of overall loudness at the received end. But that's just me. It's fun to experiment with, and AM audio is a beautiful science and also a beautiful art, so it's worthy of study. N2IRJWB4AIO.
N2IRJ.
I concur. And on the internet, it said a similar thing. It's just a fudge factor in the right direction by giving a little bit of asymmetry there. And you're never going to hear the difference. That's what they say. But it compensates for other snafus, kind of. And I'm up to number three. Let me go to number four. Number four, heartbreak. This will break your heart. It doesn't really break mine totally. But it is a curiosity. You're going to think I set up something wrong, but I don't think so. That is, the asymmetry knob on the CRL seemingly does not change the level on the oscilloscope. About the most I can notice it do is maybe if I crank it up way high, it'll start to make it flutter a little bit on this scope, but that's about all. So right now I have it parked right in the middle. It was a little bit more than that. It was like maybe at the 12:30 or 1 o'clock position, and now it's at 12 noon, and I set it up there. I'm turning it all the way counterclockwise. Doesn't seem to change the scope at all. Over.
Are you saying with a sine wave or with voice modulation or with white noise?
With a tone. Oh, maybe that was my mistake. I didn't use white noise.
Yeah, well, a white noise doesn't have much asymmetry to begin with, and a tone has zero. You will never get asymmetry in a tone.
I'll have to redo these tests then with the white noise. Sorry, I forgot that we had used white noise.
Well, actually, if you want to test for asymmetry, the only valid test is your own voice.
Oh, my own voice. Well, if it's my own voice, then I can get an honest 120. And like I said, if I go, I can get 150.
Yeah, because the way we've got things set up, we're not forcing asymmetry. We're just allowing the natural asymmetry to pass through. And so, therefore, the only way to get asymmetry with the way your system is set up is to actually have some asymmetrical program material to begin with. That means your voice. White noise is very close to being symmetrical. Every now and then you might get a bump or something in a white noise signal that is asymmetrical, but for the most part it's symmetrical. And a sine wave is purely symmetrical.
Well, if we have to start at the origin, we're back to your hypothesis that the flex really is behaving properly. It's just limited by its maximum power output. Say that I'm just going to make up some round numbers. Say I'm driving 20 watts carrier out of it, and I want to modulate that fully. That would take me to 80 watts. But if I want, say, 200% positive symmetry, then I would need 160 watts, I guess. And since this rig is clamped at 100, I won't be able to achieve that. Is that true? Over.
Well, that's right. But, of course, if you're running the drive down at 10 or something, then that limit shouldn't bother you because you're only putting out maybe, 5 watts of carrier or something when you have the drive down that low.
Okay, I'm looking at forward power. Forward power. It's showing 11 watts. What I'm not talking, it's showing 2 watts. When I'm modulating, it goes up to 11 watts. Huh. Well, let me think. I guess I could, in theory, support 200% modulation. So maybe it's back to what I was accusing Flex of doing, catering to these entities that don't believe in exploring the limits of the universe.
Lots of positive peaks, 200% to be no problem, provided that there is that degree of asymmetry in your voice. Now, your voice might not have that large degree of asymmetry. Some people have more and some people have less. I think when I was there, I was getting tremendous asymmetry.
I guess you turned it over to me. That carrier is still with me. It's 680 hertz down in frequency from our frequency here of 7283 on this Wednesday, January 14th, 2015. Later tonight, we'll have a midweek Liberty Net. I'm really glad that we're having this right now.
I don't think any place else. I haven't had a problem.
We're coming in well. Some stations have moved in almost on top of us. But when your carrier comes on, even though their voices are somewhat annoying, I'm still understanding just about everything you're saying. In fact, I'm understanding probably 99% of everything you're saying, despite the stations that have moved in close. So you're doing well, and regardless of how asymmetrical your voice is, I wouldn't obsess over that. If the asymmetry is going in the right direction, and the asymmetry is not extreme, and I don't think it is extreme, at least not with your voice and the settings you've got, and if the negative and positive modulation are reasonably dense and reasonably consistent, which I think they are, from my ear to this end, you have an AM signal that is working the way it should. So I think you can just leave everything alone. Everything is working the way it should be. You sound natural and good. You sound just as good on AM as you did on ESSB. And maybe in some ways you even sound a little bit better on AM because of the carrier holds the AGC constant, so I don't get the receiver AGC modifying your dynamic range. That's one of the advantages of full carrier AM. So all in all, I'd say it's working well. And you have an AM signal you can be proud of, and you can get up here in the AM window on 40 or get up on 75 with that signal, just the way it's adjusted now, and be very proud of it, in my opinion. N2IRJ in the Salt Flats, New Jersey. This is WB4AIO near Beaverdale, PA, high in the Allegheny Mountains. Turning it over to your station.
In that case, it was worth the sleep deprivation. And I was going to say, if those AMers up above us have left, we could QSY a couple KCs or something, and then the slot bucketeers who came into our passband beneath wouldn't be bothering us. So I'll let you make an observation on that. And if in a little bit we don't see any activity, I guess maybe they really did clear over.
I think maybe the guys on 90 aren't there anymore, but there's another group that started up on 95. So if we moved to 90, we'd still be too close to them. And maybe we could move to to 85. I don't know if that would be an improvement. If you want to try, we can move up 2KC to 85, and then we'd still be 10KC away from the guys on 95.
Yeah, I'll give that a try. I'll move up 2 KCs to 7285. I'm getting pushed out because of the slot bucketers on the lower side who invaded our passband. QSY, I'll meet you there.
N2IRJ, N2IRJ, WB4AIO calling.
This is N2IRJ responding. And I'm still getting the slot bucketers on the bottom side, but I narrowed the skirt there a little, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, well, there's another group that's on the upper side, so I don't really know if this is any better for me or not. You tell me. There was another group that was on our upper side, and we're still getting interference from them. So I don't know. 40 meters in the morning is a crazy, crazy place.
Yeah, maybe it'll end up being a wash. I'm looking at the low cut. I have it at 4,200. The upper cut is at 5,600. And in fact, that's maybe a little more wide than what you're transmitting.
Oh, no, I'm transmitting much wider than that. I'm transmitting 10 on each side.
Oh, well, I could return that favor. Hell, I've been in this narrow-bandedness the whole time. You usually preach to me about being narrow.
AM 5K, which is 5K on each side, and AM 10K, which is 10K on each side.
Well, I now introduce you to full-fledged fidelity. If you thought I sounded good before, I hope you're able to tell that there's a difference now. Over.
What were you transmitting before?
5 kilohertz each side, now it's 10 kilohertz each side for a total of 20.
Okay. Well, the other way sounded good too, but this way sounds fine. I'm listening in a 15 kilohertz bandwidth. That's my standard default for AM. In other words, it's 7.5 on each side, and it should sound the same width as our typical ESSB. 7.5 on each side is my typical receive bandwidth for AM. Although sometimes I drag the skirts in to get rid of interference off to the side, I try to do it only on one side. Retain the 7.5 kilohertz audio from one sideband anyway. So that's my philosophy of AM reception, WB4AIO.
A good philosophy. On this sound card oscilloscope, I just changed it from sine to white noise, I guess. And it's not all that important about the volume. I could deal with all that when the time comes. That's all. I'm looking at it right now. That's why I'm asking. After we're done with the QSO and I get some sleep, I will eventually come back and I'll want to check the asymmetry with the white noise. And also, another thing I was going to check is the sideband trapezoid. And I don't know how to do that. Do I just talk on sideband and I should see something that looks like a triangle on its side, kind of an isosceles triangle, you know? I mean, I've seen pictures of it before on the web, you know, on oscilloscopes, but I don't know how to generate that. Over.
You do not have the capability to do that right now. You need to use the RF signal as the sweep. You do not need an internal sweep. And then you feed the RF sample into the vertical input while you're using the RF signal as the sweep, and you don't have anything set up to do that right now, so that is not within your realm of capability.
Huh, no wonder I couldn't figure out how to pull it off. Is it something that could be done? It's a matter of hooking up some wires in certain ways, and then in the future I could do that? Over?
Possibly, but it really doesn't tell you anything unless you use the RF sweep from your exciter and the amplitude from your amplifier, and then the linearity of the shape of the triangle will tell you if you're getting non-linearity in your amplifier. It's a lot of trouble. You could do it, but in my opinion, it's not worth the trouble because you can see if your amplifier is saturating just with a wave envelope pattern. Once you learn how to read the wave envelope pattern, you'll be able to tell in a second if your amplifier is clipping.
Are you talking sideband?
Yeah. Same on AM, it wouldn't be any different. Same thing. You can tell if your amplifier's clipping.
Roger.
I'm not going to stay here too much longer, Marty. I want to get a few things done, but it was good to help you out with your AM settings and your ESSB settings on Power SDR.
Yep, it was beneficial, mutual beneficiality. I was going to say one other thing before you go. What is it? Something technical I came across. It's on the tip of my tongue. Another discovery of some sort I wanted to share with you. Well, I can say so long for now. I'm looking at my power gauge. The analog one is going up to 10 watts. The digital readout is saying I'm peaking at 11. And when I'm not talking, it goes down to 2 watts. Boy, I hope that's true. That would be beautiful if my idling carrier is only 2 watts. That's beautiful. Henriette is going up nicely. It looks real sweet. I can see the uprise even on that average reading meter when I modulate. So I really am putting out more power. Okay, I guess parting is such sweet sorrow, but I'll do it now, and then I'll try to remember the other thing and tell it to you later. It has something, I think, to do with software or SDRs or something, and I can't remember now. Over.
Well, if you can't remember now, I guess it will have to wait till later. And by the way, the FM in Power SDR, the problem is not a problem of deviation. There's plenty of deviation. The problem is one of frequency response. Unlike with AM and unlike with single sideband, on FM you cannot change the frequency response. You cannot adjust it for a low end of 10 hertz or 20 hertz. It's fixed at something like 300 hertz. You cannot adjust the high end for 4, 5, 6 kilohertz. It's fixed at 3 kilohertz. It's all fixed. And not only that, but you can't adjust the processing either. They've got a built-in extreme clipper. It clips it just like business band radio. Commercial two-way radio FM setups. It's a setup like that, and you can't change it. There's no adjustment. You cannot switch to high fidelity, high quality FM. It's a fixed in Power SDR, and you're forced to run narrow band clipped audio, just like a business band handy talking radios on VHF. That's the heartbreak of Power SDR's FM mode. It's pretty much worthless for those who care about audio.
I'm glad you clarified that. Yeah, when I used to do the 2-meter repeater circuit, I had a handy talkie, Laura did too, and I increased the deviation some. There's a pot in there, and that made it louder. But you're right, the frequency response was unchanged. It was fixed. If you increased the loudness too much with too much deviation, it would start dropping out of the repeater. The repeater couldn't deal with that. It had to be within certain limits. And I kept it under the point at which there'd be trouble, and then put in a little extra factor of safety. So I was plenty loud compared to other people, but it wasn't, ugly sounding or anything like that. Of course, intrinsically, there is an ugliness to it if it doesn't everything blow 300 hertz or above. And by the way, I remembered...
Into IRJ.
Oh, it came up unexpectedly.
Into IRJ.
That time it was expectedly. It was... Oh, I'm forgetting it the second time now. I'm almost remembering. Something... Oh, AGC. That's it, yes. No, AL, yeah, EGC. I tested that for about 2 hours this morning on 40 meters. There was a QSO, maybe just a couple kilohertz below us, I think. And I was on sideband, and I watched the recovery on Audacity and everything. That thing, even though it was set for a hang time of 5 seconds, it was starting to recover after 3. And it was that way a couple days ago, too. And I thought by now with restarts and all that would have cleared itself and it would have accepted what was input, but it didn't. So I put it down to zero and it obeyed that, and I ended up putting it in a different setting, and that's okay. I really didn't need to have the hang time be 5 seconds, but I don't like it that it doesn't obey me, so be aware of that. But as far as I can tell, it really is doing things in the proper sequence. I tested it. I really hard tested it again this morning. So that's 2 times now. I mean, when I would set the hang time longer, it would get longer, and then it would sort of linearly, ramp up after that time period. And that's the 5 second one we have for the custom setting. Over.
Okay. Very good. I will take a note of that. There must have been some odd problem when I experienced it at your place where it was suddenly recovering the hang time to what it would have been had the recovery time started earlier. Just one of those strange power SDR glitches, I guess. Anyway, 73, Marty, good to talk to you. I enjoyed it, and I'm having some trouble with my main computer, by the way. I think I need a new hard drive, and I've ordered one, but I'm getting a lot of crashes that I think are associated with hard drive failure. So Audacity just crashed on me, I think due to hard drive problems. I'll try to recover it. If I can recover it, I'll upload the MP3 of our QSO to the Marty site. If I can't recover it, then you'll just have to depend on my testimony that your transmitter is working very well in both the ESSB modes and the AM mode. 73, and good luck in the contest. Good to talk to you. Good to make the test, and we'll be talking at you a little bit later. N2IRJ in the great state of New Jersey. This is WB4AIO in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania near Beaverdale, where beavers are on the sidewalk, beavers are on the street. Beavers are in your own backyard, and beavers are knocking on your front door. Beavers are just about everywhere in Beaverdale, saying 73, and talk to you later.
Hey, it's Tim Tron, and they call that place locally Pennsyltucky. Hey, Tim.
Yeah, how you doing, Marty? Here, Kevin in there. I don't know if Kevin hears me. We're just barely hearing on one of the amps, and I switched to another amp, and I can hear him.
Yeah, I'm just barely hearing Tim, too. The propagation is not favoring Maine at the moment. So I'll sign out. You two can carry on. 73.
Yeah, see you later, Kevin. Anyway, I'm going to do an antenna switch. Marty, I'm on a, yes, believe it or not, a G5RV. It's a fairly large G5RV. Which has got practically a flat match here. And I can hear Kevin on it, whereas with the other, he was just barely there. So I'm going to switch over to what I call the shaded diaper. So what's this like? N2IRJ from WA1HLR.
I'm hearing you better now. I could barely hear you before. The band's going out, and Kevin had to leave. He's not trying to be rude. He was actually leaving on me. Imagine that. He really does have work to get done. And he has a computer hard drive that's malfunctioning. And good gracious. I was going to tell him on the listen out. Actually, I'll tell him here now. He'll hear it on the recording that I got an email from him. Hear that, Kevin? And it's date stamped January 13th, 2015 at 11:17 in the morning. And it says, time to start streaming the Survival Net. That's one of those auto-generated messages. Well, it just came way late. I think you got home and that you turned the PC on or something, and that's when it came out. Just so you know, if that helps you any way in troubleshooting your PC. So, Tim, that was neat how we got to talk at the end of the Liberty Net, and I sent you an email. Did you see it?
I haven't been into my email account in about 10 days now. Oh, God. Probably today.
Yeah, it's just rehashing of what I said over the air. The hyperlink to the Liberty Net site, and I am pretty sure I included that Samsung recording, the one that the FCC has from the interference the Samsung TV is causing.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear it. Well, thank God the interference levels from electronic trash and garbage is minimal on 40 for me. It's 75. You know, it just seems that there's an inordinate amount of you know, 75 meters. That range of the spectrum seems to become a dumping ground for electronic garbage. I'm not going to stay in here too long. I was up on 90 about a half hour ago talking with a few guys. I guess you and Kevin may have fired up on 85, but I don't know what you have your audio band pass set for, but from what I could tell, you're about plus and minus 8 kilohertz. And you have a lot of stuff above about 4 or 5 kilohertz, so... You know, if there was a piss weak or up frequency, you would have been covering them up. But the other guys had good, strong signals, and I was able to hear them through your upper sideband component. Well, that's one thing about 40 meters that has become a problem is the 5 kilohertz bunker mentality. That, two strong QSOs within 5 kilohertz really doesn't work very well. Myself, I try to get at least 8, maybe 10, if I can, depending on what's going on in your area. Other than that, signal is very loud here. Very, very strapping. Yeah, the G5RV is broadside just about east-west. And I don't know what part of Pennsylvania is Kevin in. Is he in western Pennsylvania or somewhere in the middle?
He's in southwestern Pennsylvania. It's close to Pittsburgh, kind of right around there.
No wonder. He's right in the broadside of the G5RV, which actually is a gain antenna. So is the shaded dipole, but I got to get the one leg of it's up at 60 feet, and it could go a little further back in another tree branch that would get the whole antenna up at a good height, because I got another antenna system that is not hooked up at the moment because I only have, you know, one trunk line, RF trunk line going into the PUS bus, which right now is hooked up to the east-west G5RV, and I've got a stacked dipole array, which is a pair of 40-meter dipoles there. Basically, it's a 20-meter lazy H, center-fed lazy H, with a lower element at 50 feet and the upper element at about 92. And it's right on the very top of the hill. And I know it's a very low-angle radiator. It's got a little bit of gain on 40. On 20 meters, due to the white noise hash that I'm dealing with, that it almost is unusable as far as receiving. It's pretty nasty. So. And I got a... I'm beginning to think I know what it is more and more, and it's not coming from my property, and like you, I may have to get the FCC involved if the party that's generating the hash, which may be either the cable TV company or it may be coming up from the phone company, because, you know, both on 20, 15, and 10 with the... stacked dipoles, basically lazy H on the higher bands. The white noise hash is pretty bad. And I don't know if it's coming from the phone company's lines or what, because the power line run that serves the hill comes right up an access area that's cleared out. And the center of the antenna is right centered where the end of the line is. You know, the high voltage pole transformer is maybe, oh, about 20 feet or so or less below that of the center of the Lazy H. And, you know, if the Lazy H were to drop vertically, it wouldn't hit the power lines. But if we're, you know, a few feet out, it would fall right across the 7200 volt power line. But you have, you know, the just digital hash. And I think it's riding on the power lines. And I just don't know. It's annoying. Maybe this summer I'll have some research done. Now we'll see what we shall see. So hopefully you're hearing this junk okay. N2IRJ from WA1HIR.
KC2WTS.
N2IRJ.
Come on in, KC2, I think WTS. Marty, you're N2IRJ.
Okay, this is KC2WTS. I heard you guys in there and thought I might try see how good this transmitter's working. And Timmy, I know you know which one it is. It's Bob ICQ's old transmitter, a pair of 4250s, modulated by a pair of 810s. I finally got it on 40 meters here and was wondering if you could give me an audio report. I got the speech amp that that came with it. So I was wondering how it sounds, and I believe it's N2IRJ, how it's getting out there to you. Back to you, KC2WTS.
To my ear, it's sounding nicely. However, the bandwidth is constricted. It's less than 5 kc. In fact, well, the band's down, so I couldn't maybe get the full measurement out, but it was looking like maybe a little over 3,000 on each side. Is that about what you're shooting for? Over.
Well, pretty much just zero beated you. I got a 310B exciter here, so I don't know what I don't have a scope or anything. The scope I got a part right now, so I don't know. That's what I wanted to, when I heard you guys in there, I wanted to see if you could help me pinpoint a little bit. N2IRJ, KC2WTS.
Okay, that time I saw 3,700 hertz. You made it to 3,700. Keep in mind the band isn't all that favorable either, and I think I'll put it over to Tim, and he can give his analysis, which is going to be better than mine. But I do have somewhat of an ear, and I have the ability to see it on a panoramic adapter, too. Over to you, Tim.
Okay.
I'm not going to stay in here too much longer. I'm working on a little project here that I thought I had it all done, but ran afoul of some other issues. Anyway, Bill, you're doing well here. And, you know, how I was just telling bandwidth is I have the Icon 706, and when I was checking bandwidth above, I just went to upper sideband and just kept tuning until I wasn't hearing any more signal products. And then going on the lower side, I tuned down in the lower sideband mode down below, so if there are any products, I could hear them. And it seemed with your signal, Marty, it died out pretty rapidly above and below 8. And I haven't
tuned for Bill's signal, but no, it's I know when Bob built the transmitter, Bob made them sound good, but I don't think he went to the nth degree to ensure good high-end frequency response. I'm wondering what you're seeing, Marty, on this setup, because obviously you have the Flex, and the Flex gives a pretty good indication of bandwidth. So I'm very curious as to what you're seeing on my signal, Marty.
I'm seeing you go out 30,000 total, 15,000 each side. Wish I could do the same. And you're right. You were saying that before about 8,000. That's what it's set at. So you're pretty good with your VFO. Commendable alacrity there. I wanted to also say, since you have to go, a couple things that were on my mind. I'll run them fast. One was about that... G5RV, I'd like to know, is it an extended one, a version that works down here? Normal, well, I guess a regular G5RV would work on 40, but man, when people show up on 75 with one, you know that story. But I heard you can actually make them to go down to even 160 if you get the ratios right. But anyway, the noise, this has been on my mind since we last spoke, and I was going to bring up the topic, and then you brought it up right now about that hash that you're thinking might be rotting in or leaking out of the cable company. Well, I dealt with the cable company, and it's because this neighbor who has the Samsung with the harmful interference, she called three times and ran them out here and insisted that they were to blame. It wasn't her TV. So I ended up getting a visit at my door from the cable company asking, what frequency are you complaining about? And I told them, and the technician really didn't get it, so I ended up having to communicate with the field technical manager, and he understands it. And we had a really nice conversation on the phone, and he shared with me information. He goes, first of all, as much as it would like to help, we can't help. You know, you're talking about 3.630 megahertz. The lowest test equipment we have is 25 megahertz. That's as low as we can go. This is Optimum Online Cable TV Company. I think they're all about the same. The guy I spoke with has responsibility. He's in charge of monthly reporting to the FCC. The cumulative leakage index. They're only allowed to put out so much crap and get it in. It's in the VHF and above realm. So I don't think the cable directly, although there could be some other aspect I'm not aware of it, like something else riding up the line, unless they do use frequencies that low. But he claims they do not. He said everything they use is VHF and above, and their test equipment, nothing goes below 25 megahertz. And since you're maybe going to leave, I'll put it back to you, and I'll pick up Bill, too. Over.
Okay. Well, hard to say. So you say you're seeing my signal plus and minus 15, or is that 15 kilohertz total bandwidth?
Normally, it's much less than that. But every once in a while, when you hit the sibilance, you hit an S. I swear to you, it jumps up like you wouldn't believe at 15 KC each side. That means a total of 30,000 hertz. My hat's off to you, buddy.
Yay. Now, I'm probably hitting a little too hard. Yeah, I wonder what this is like. I wonder if it is still spiking out there, or is it cleaned up?
Well, between your coughing and everything, I did manage to see 4,700 hertz each side. And I'll give you credit for $5,000 each side, okay? But the only time that it goes out to 15, and boy does it go out to 15 very blatantly, is when you do a hiss, when you go do a s. That is the all-important test. In fact, I should do that test for you. I could open up my bandwidth more. It is now. So when I go s, if you do the VFO swishing. In fact, let me do it for you. I'll make a sustained hiss. Don't know if that was enough time, but I ran out of breath over.
Oh, yeah, I put the rice box up on lower sideband at 7292. That's where it peaked up, and just sounded like, you know what it sounded like was a, you know, a DRM signal.
Oh, I completely know what that's like. Digital Radio Mondial.
Into IRJ.
Perfect timing. I have it here, and I, for the first time in history, was able to get the BBC after all these years. Normally, the signal-to-noise ratio is too bad. Even though it's a strong signal, the signal-to-noise ratio isn't there, and you need to, well, I need to have about nearly 20 decibels of signal-to-noise ratio to receive it, and I was able to get it on 3955. It's a first, 3955. Now, previously, I picked up 9.8 megahertz Radio Romania, and I picked up Nigeria briefly. They were pretty crappy, their audio. They're taking up 10 kilohertz of bandwidth DRM to modulate 3. Then I pick up Germany, and they have an algorithm whereby they're only taking up the 10 kilohertz, but their audio bandwidth is 13. That was really cool. Over.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because Alan has been speaking about eventually experimenting with DRM at one of the BCQs. Anyway, I'll fill you in on the antenna, but over to Bill before he gets bored and goes away. KC2WTS from WA1H and YLR.
Okay, Tim. I think you might have me confused with somebody else. Handle here is John, and I'm in Oxford, New York. Used to talk to you on my Valiant, but then I got the opportunity to buy this transmitter from Bob. Ran it on 80 for a little bit, and then a storm took my antenna down, and we were in the midst of a lot of stuff going on, so I finally got this this rig tuned up on 40 here. So just, you know, like I say, and you know the speech amp that Bob had with it, I think you ran this transmitter at one time. It was the old one that was on about the 5-foot rack there that he had at his house. I think he had it there for 35 years. So the only thing I did to it was recap the low voltage power supply and bring it down and hook it up. So I was just wondering how close the audio sounds. And I didn't know whether I see people running those 528 symmetrics and things of that nature, and wondered what your opinion was on those. Well, they're not cheap for sure. About $300 or $400 used, and about $850 or $900 new. So, back to you, KT2WTS.
Okay, John, very good. Well, that's who I was thinking of. I thought his name was Bill for a moment, or your name was Bill. But I know you have Bob's transmitter. I'm going to try the antenna switch on you just to see if you notice any difference. I'm on the shaded dipole, and now I'm on the east-west G5RV. This is the east-west G5RV, and back on the shaded dipole. What are you noticing, John?
Okay, Tim, you're about half a S unit higher on the meter here, on the shaded dipole. And it's a Hammerlin BC779 I'm listening to you on, and it's pretty stingy with its report. You're about, and noticeably clearer just by ear here, too. KC2WTS.
Okay. So, I take it you're using the speech amp that Bob built, 2A3s or 6B4s, and what are you using for a microphonium?
Regular old D104, Tim, and it's probably not in the best shape. I was kind of wanting to upgrade to something a little more, unless, I don't know how it sounds. You know, maybe if it's good, I will leave it. But if you can think we can improve it with a few little peripherals, I'd be open to that. NBA1HLR, KC2WTS.
Okay. Well, you see, what I've... Let me relapse in my chair here. What I've found out is that all D-104s are a little different. So what's your... Is that the only one you have, or do you have several of them?
I've got a couple of them in various states of condition. I've also got an EV-638 microphone and a Shure 444D, I believe it is. And I, for information's sake, I emailed Bob Heil, and he has recommended a PR-187 or something. I don't know whether you knew any history on that thing or whatever. KC2WTS.
Okay. Well, see, I'm gathering information. Now, with your D-104, it's just a straight, unamplified D-104 into the speech amp, right?
Yes, it is. And he has a switch on it to switch phasing. And this is the switch in the lower position. This is a switch in the upper position. Switch in the lower position. And the switch in the upper position. Didn't know whether it made any difference there.
Well, it may sound a little better in the upper. I don't know. A little cleaner, but... Do you have a monitor scope?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a part right now for caps. So I'm flying blind. That's why I wanted to... I knew that N2IRJ, if I got your call right, my pen ran out of ink here. I'm not having a good morning here. And I knew you guys had a scope, and I thought that you probably had something here hooked up on a better class receiver there, Tim. So just wondered how it shook out here. Got the audio set kind of on the low side. I got plenty of audio to drive, so I don't think I'm short in that area unless it sounds that way. So WA1HLR, KC2WTS.
Okay. Well, what that switch did is reverse the phase. So that's why you... you must have a scope. And a D-104 is a rather asymmetrical microphonium. So if you don't have it in the right phase, you'll really see it. You know, one position... You'll be nailing the bass line while probably modulating 60 or 70% positive. And then the other way around, you'd be modulating 60, 70% negative and better than 100% positive. So obviously when you find that out, you want to take a, you know, some kind of a permanent marker and put a dot above... the switch position to mark it, and you'll leave it there. Damn it, my nose is slightly... there. Yep. But the D-104's audio characteristics have a rising... characteristic in the high end, and I would think that that microphonium preamp that Bob built may have been, based on a VZR design. I don't know. As a D-104 is, you know, its performance is very, very much determined by the value of resistor that it looks into. For instance, a lot of the Junkston gear... All the Junkston transmitters, whether it be a Ranger or a Challenger, which was a real piece of crap, or the Junkston 500, They all used a 1 megohm terminating resistor at the grid. Now, D104 really wants to see at least 10 megohms, at least. I've built up, I've taken a number of D104s that have that JFET preamp. Well, that's not a JFET, you know, the bipolar two-transistor amplifier, and bulldozed a number of parts off the board and use an MPF 102 FET. And, use a 22 megohm gate resistor. And that allows the D104 to have a very, very deep low-end response. It doesn't emphasize the low-end, it just makes it flat. And D104 has got an upper mid-range and high-end peak in the characteristic, and above about 4 or 5 kilohertz, it begins to drop like a rock. So, you know, for a bare-bones transmitter with a bare-bones microphonium, without doing anything, no, except do the right things with the right load impedances and open up the audio response of the modulator, you can't beat a D104. Forget ham radio microphoniums. I'm not familiar with the 638. Forget the 444. That is strictly a communications-grade, public address-grade microphonium or a paging microphonium, you know? For AM work, forget it. It's going to sound like crap. And, Heil does have a couple of microphoniums that are worth a damn. One of them being the PR40 and the lesser expensive PR30. I don't know about his PR18, whatever it is. But I think I've heard a few, and they don't measure up to the PR40. That's what you really want, is a PR40. I got one from Bob. He bestowed it upon me. I've got an RE20, which is a Electrovoice microphonium, which for years was a gold standard. And I compared the PR40 with the RE20. And the PR40 is a better microphonium than the RE20. It's flatter, it's got better frequency response, and the... you know, the cardioid pattern is very, very sharp in terms of rejecting crap off the backside. So I use that in my studio. What I'm using here is about a $70 large diaphragm electric condenser microphonium. I like the electrics. The electrics have the widest and flattest frequency response of any microphonium. And good ones don't cost an arm and a left nut. So, and that's what I'm using here is a 520 AD, a Symmetrix 528, but you need more than just that. You have to have an audio processor to follow it. In my case, I'm using an Optimod, an Orban 9000A, which is about an 80s vintage AM broadcast audio processor from the, and I paid a grand for it. So it's not cheap, but I've done a few tweaks inside the thing, and the output of the 520 AD goes directly into the Optimod. So what the Optimod does is it keeps the levels constant, whether I the deepest lows or the highest highs. Whereas with the Symmetrix, the Symmetrix provides 48-volt phantom power to the large diaphragm electric condenser microphonium. And, you know, it's got a 3-band parametric equalizer, which I'm using to sculpt the upper mid-range and high-end response. And there also is a compressor. The compressor is after the microphonium preamp section. And then you go into the equalizer. The problem there is that if you're using a transmitter with good flat audio response and you try and sculpt the audio, by picking up the upper mid-range and high end, being that the EQing is done after the compression, then you could easily over-modulate and splatter with the high frequencies while trying to balance things out for the low end to be there. So you have to follow it with a limiter, you know. And then you go into your transmitter with that. You know, you can't do it with one box. That's why I'm saying once you step off the precipice into the the world of audio processing, you know, one box just doesn't do it. You have to have a couple. And there's stuff out there that's big bang for the buck, and then there's other stuff that you can empty your wallet over that won't really buy you a whole lot. But rather than piss away your money on a 528E, what I would look for is a DBX 286. The 286, I think they're up to a 286S, which is active balanced out. The plain Jane 286, 286A, which hasn't been manufactured for a while, is unbalanced out, but that's okay. Number of the you know, the radio stations I'm involved with use the 286s. They work just about as well as the 528E. They're simpler and easier to set up, and they're about half the cost if you have to buy one new. And if you look around on ePay, you'll probably find a 286A for $100 or something like that. That's very well worth it. And the 286 also provides phantom power for an electric condenser microphonium. Either that, or you can shut that off and just use a fairly good quality dynamatic microphonium. And once again, you don't want to use ham radio microphoniums. None of them are any good. You know, they a lot of them I find, like, you know, I have one of the Heil microphoniums here that demonstrate it. This one came from a friend of mine's estate. I'm going to give it to a friend of mine. It's the High Z Classic. It's in diamond-shaped metal housing, something like an RCA 44BX. So I'm going to plug it in, and then I got to run the gain up because it doesn't have the output that the electric has. All right. I see the phases out. Okay, that's better. I'm getting into the processing about as hard as I was with the electric microphonium. And this, I think, is just basically a repackaging of one of his typical HC, what is it, the HC5 element, and has the HC4, you know, where it's got either broad response or yellowy sounding audio. If I flip this little switch, yay, this is the yellowy sounding DX slop bucket microphonium element here. Yay. And this here is the full range element. But I made a modification. This is a high impedance microphonium, essentially just a low impedance element, or the elements going into this little piece of crap transformer to bring the impedance up for high impedance. And the problem there is the depending on the grade of the transformer depends on how well the microphonium will breathe as far as audio is concerned, and as far as low-end response in particular. So I wanted to give this microphonium the benefit of the doubt and make it usable with any sort of a balanced low impedance microphonium situation. But the one little thing I did different is I've got a a little capacitor coupling the high, the tin can element in parallel with the lower frequent, with the good dynamatic element. So essentially, meaning that the little element has high end to it, it's like a tweeter element. So I don't know if that has had any effect. I know when I've monitored the thing, it does sound crisp. So now that you've listened to this thing enough, I'm going to go back to the electric standby. There we go. Back on the electric condenser microphonium, which should have much deeper low end, yet the high end doesn't sound bad at all. So I'm going to send it to a buddy of mine as a gift. he'd enjoy it. That he would, but but as far as the speech amplifier that Bob built, the thing you got to do to figure out what you're going to do is get an audio oscillator, a good scope, get on 40 meters at night when Radio China is on, use them as a dummy load, and sweep the transmitter for frequency response. You know, see what the audio looks like. You know, where does the waveform begin to distort? Where does the high end begin to roll off? You know, you got to do all the tests before you really figure out what you're going to gain. So, enough of that. At least for now. So, I wonder what you think of the two different microphoniums there. Marty, wonder what you think of the two, and I'll fill you in on the G5RV thing. N2IRJ from WM1HLR.
Hi, thanks, Tim. I think that the electric is better. The other one sounds like it has more response between, say, 100 and 500 hertz, whereas the one you have is more open. It's not dense there. It's distributed wider. You have better lower bass response and still articulation. They both had sibilants. I was checking there. Most of the time when you talk, it's kind of common to see 9,000 hertz excursions, and I was thinking I maybe misled you before when I said the 15,000. It's only on an extremely rare occasion if you hit an S, and it has to be the proper way, especially since the band is down. That's when I can see it, but it's really neat because it's there hiding, waiting, and ready, and when you do it the right way, it is born. I mean, your radio can pass the gas. But most of the time, in this last QSO, I was watching it, and it was staying. Usually, you said the letter C, the letter S, and a few other things that gave me 9,000 from you. And I was going to comment about sidebands. I wanted to analyze John's, too. He was wanting to know if it's modulated enough. But I'll have you know, John, the band is down, so I really can't give you a fair assessment. And I'll tell you, Tim, what I'm seeing on you. And, again, this is not a fair assessment either because the band is too low. When I tell you what the sidebands are showing, you're going to be disappointed, maybe. But anyway, using my two-phased antennas here, I can look at both simultaneously, and looking at the westward pointing beverage, which is very non-favorable to you, Tim, the sidebands are 20 decibels down from the peak of the carrier, and on the vertical antenna, at the exact same moment in time, there's an 11 dB difference from the peak of the carrier to the sidebands. And I don't know. I guess it's the phenomenon might be just signal strength. Over.
Fired up real close. You mean how well are you hitting me? Is that the question?
Oh, no. The question was, why are your sidebands at that decibel level compared to your carrier? I think that if we were having a better copy on each other, I'd be able to give a better assessment. I'm saying that the horizontal antenna is saying that your sidebands are 20 decibels down from the peak carrier power, and I'm saying that on the vertical antenna, at the same moment in time, it reads 11 dB down. And in other words, I'm getting you better on the vertical than the westward pointing beverage, which of course is to be expected. But if I had a good copy on you, I think that no doubt you're running 100% modulation or better. I should be able to see that.
No. Let's see. You know, as it is, yeah, the modulation is right up there. I'm, you know, making almost 100% negative, and, oh, I don't know, 125, 130, maybe 150% positive. The transmission system will do it, and it's pretty dense, but with the distribution of human speech over the bandpass, who knows? I know if I, you know, one thing I should do some of the time is break out the audio oscillator, hook it up, and just put like a 400 hertz or 1 kilohertz tone into the front end, tweak things to 100% modulation, and you should see the sidebands be 6 dB down from the carrier.
Yeah, we have a carrier right around 7290 right now, horning in on my synchronous AM. It wants to seek and destroy. Anyway, for a split second in time, when you first started your transmission, about the first 7 seconds...
Into IRJ.
That's when I saw it. It was true. You were taking it as far as it could go. I saw a 6 dB difference between the carrier and the sideband. It's band conditions. That's what's happening here. I was going to ask John a question, and then I'm going to make a comment to you about it, because I have a theory. John, you have EE3 DUQ's rig, right?
I'm not in debt one bit. I didn't have to put my $5,500 on the friggin' credit card. I went out and paid cash for my ICOM when I wanted a new radio.
I think you probably know which one it is if you've heard it before. KC2WTS.
You know what? I'm sorry I couldn't receive that. Could you say it again? I had to narrow my upper pass band. The guys on 7290 captured it, so to speak. It's not FM, I know, but we even went to AM and got off synchronous AM. And could you tell me the beginning? You got Bill's rig, right?
No, it's Bob. It's W2ICQ, his rig. And if you just wondered how you're getting me now.
Yeah, it's a transmitter built by Bob W2ICQ. It's a pair of 4-400s or 4-250s modulated by a pair of 810s. That's what it is.
Okay, well, my theory is messed up then. When Tim originally called you Bill, I was thinking he had it in his head that it came from W3DUQ, and that's why he associated the name Bill, but that wasn't the case at all. I will say to you, Tim, I meant to tell you in the LibertyNet queue, so we had that I respected that, you know, memorial that you had for Bill, W3DUQ. I listened to it. I tried to listen to it, and then unfortunately I had to do a LibertyNet, and so I had to try to record it off the stream. Normally that would work, and I got some of it, but then something went wrong. It started stuttering, and it's all messed up. So if you have a copy of that, one day it would be nice to have. Kevin called in, he told me, and I never did get to hear him. I have like a two-hour recording right before we're playing Don't Fear the Reaper. And it was packed with all your excitement along the way. So, yeah, I'm glad you respected him for that. And, of course, you knew the guy for so long, too. Over.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, Bill and I, I first heard Bill on a hot August night. Maybe it was late July or August night in 1966. He was only in his 20s then, and here was a guy that was full of life, you know. You know, he thought beyond the box, and you know, and all around a cool guy, you know. Yep. Well, all the shows I do are archived, unless the stream was having problems. Nobody told me about that, but when I did another show, I think a couple of weeks after. I did two memorial shows. I continued it. I had a long interview or discussion with Joe W3GMS and couldn't fit everything in, so I cut Joe's interview and basically said to be continued next week, which it was. And got a one or two others. I had one from Chris W2JBL and then finally Pete WA1SOV, which was live. He called in and I put him on the patch. And and that pretty well wound it up. So there you go. But all the stuff is archived. If you go to the website at WBCQ.com and Area 51 and Program Archives, you'll see that there's a list of stuff for Radio Timtron. You can always click on that and see what's there. There's a lot more stuff that I've done that has not been posted yet, but hopefully the memorial shows will be there. Or if they're not there now, they'll be there in the future. So there you go. Yep, there you go. So, you know, I had pieces, parts of Bill's transmitter. What Bill used to run, when I first met him, is he had a heap shit Apache in which he gutted out the modulator. That was gone. It was just strictly an RF section to be modulated. And he put a pair of bigger TV sweep tubes in the final. But they were configured in an interesting way, is what the slang term was, the upside down tube. Essentially, what he had there was a high level balanced modulator. And he had a big high power external modulator that used a pair of 4CX300As, which you know, were good for about 400 or 500 watts of audio. A big mod transformer, which I acquired from him later, that got destroyed in the fire of 92. And that piece of mod iron you know, went to the 6DQ5s, and he had a Variac on the primary of the plate transformer in the Apache so he could bring things down to a matter of maybe 10 or 15 watts of carrier. And then he had a homebrew linear amplifier that used a pair of Amprex triodes known as 5868s, which are kind of like a repackaged 833. 450 watts of plate dissipation, they're medium mu triodes, and he can whistle up to 4,000 volts on them. So, you know, they're more effective tubes than 3500s. You just have to provide bias. So, I remember being in his place, and, you know, he had to borrow a watt meter, and typically he'd run about 180 to 200 watts output of carrier. But he'd modulate a good 300-400% at times. Double sideband with carrier. And he had a synchronous detector that he built. Hollow state. all hollow state sync detector. And he had that after an HRO-60. He had quite an arrangement of stuff. And for high fidelity, he had an IF pickoff going into an AM-FM high-fidelity tuner into the IF strip. So he had quite the station back in the 60s and in through the early 70s. And then, I don't know, we got into the late 70s, early 80s, and he got another trailer. And he just got rid of everything. He told me that after I was visiting him and he gave me the mod iron and a few things, they just hauled the trailer away, equipment and all, and pushed it over an embankment somewhere, which I would like to think he was kidding, but probably not. And that destroyed all his gear. And then he went the rice box route, FT-101E, that he did the Henry LR mods to, and then he improved it upon that. And then eventually Wazoo FT-102 with a number of things done with that, and then from the 102, I think he got a 1000D. And for many years, he had a Dentron MLA 2500 piece of grid amplifier that he'd run at reduced levels. And then when the tubes finally gave out, I was visiting him, and he gave the thing to me to see if I could retrofit it with a single 8877. And I looked at the thing, and it would take a huge amount of work to do that. And I tried to convince him that he should spend some money. It'd be pretty easy to drop a pair of 3CX800s in there, which would make a very conservative PA section. So he didn't want to spend the money, so the amp went up for sale as is, and I forget who came and got it, but it went away. So, what he had for ham gear in the end was not much. This is WA1H and YLR.
Okay, Tim, I'm going to pick it up. I didn't hear that other station in there, and if he is, I apologize, because I band's kind of going a little south down here in Oxford. I learned a lot today, so I think I'm going to own one of these DBX 286S's. I've been looking around on eBay while I was listening to this. Got some decent prices. So I think I'm going to do that. I'd like to get the model number of that microphone you're using there. I know it's an Electret, but what model is it? And I also have another question, is I have a Johnson Thunderbolt, and I'd like to know what your opinion is, if you have the time, to drive that with a T4XB Drake that I want to do some AM mods to, the K1, I think, well, maybe it's JBL, maybe Chris come up with the mods for that. I thought it was either him or K1JJ, and I'd like to drive that Thunderbolt amp with that. So I didn't know if you had a quick comment or whether there's more than you could get into at this time, but that's the question I got for you. Is it doable? W1HLR, KC2WTS.
Okay, yeah. I got some time, and then I'm going to get back to my project. Yeah, I'm quite familiar with the Thunderbolt. In fact, when I was working and living out in Surrey, my employer had a collection of Johnson gear, which he still has. He has a Thunderbolt, and I made a number of changes to it. For one thing, the amplifier is very poorly cooled, so you'll have lots of failure issues. They're known for losing the plate transformer because things run so damn hot inside the can. So what I did is, right behind where the two 4400s are located, I cut out a hole for a 6-inch muffin fan on steroids. I used a 230-volt fan running on 120 in the exhaust mode, which would suck the heat from the tubes right out the back. And that cooled it down, but you have to do that. You can't just leave that stuff out or you're going to be burning things up. It's been said that looking at the front of the amplifier, the tube in the far right corner tends to fail, like a metal-to-glass seal. Much like in a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, the trailing cylinder, the V-twin, tends to have oil leak problems and other things. Cylinder that's up front doesn't have, because it gets the wind and the other cylinder gets the heat and what little breeze from the one up front. So, it's the same kind of deal. And inside the amplifier, they have a very poor excuse for an air cooling system. They have a little scrotless fan underneath that pulls up air through the cabinet perforations. The cabinets in the Johnson gear greatly obstruct airflow. So you want to replace that fan with a muffin fan. You'd play around with the voltage on it, maybe stick a resistor in series with it so that you have one that doesn't sound like a, that doesn't make a huge amount of noise, but one that moves a fair quantity of air. And then you mount the fan, you make the appropriate cutout in the bottom cover, and then you slide it in the cabinet, take a magic marker, and scribe out a circle. And then with the electric drill, drill a bunch of holes and take the saber saw and cut it out. And then take the fan guard and bolt the fan guard to the bottom. And then with the rubber feet, I just use longer bolts and a stack of fender washers under each one, like four of them, to raise the thing up so that the amplifier is an inch above the table. Because having it so low to the table really restricts the airflow as well. It's all about airflow. You must have airflow. That's a very important thing. Gotta have airflow. The other thing is being that I used it strictly, mostly for AM work, is I put a plate contactor in there. You really want to put something in that's a step start circuit, but a plate contactor that during standby, the high voltage, the primary voltage is removed from the plate transformer, so the high voltage power supply components are not being energized. Then when you key up the transmit, it's like with this amplifier. I'm using a linear, and you can probably hear the clunk. That's the plate contactor kicking in the amplifier. I pull plate voltage off when I go on standby. The problem is with linear amplifiers, because they're designed for fast-paced box-type slot bucket QSOs or CW in some cases, and very competitive DXing or cornhole testing or any of that kind of thing where you have to have the amplifier be there immediately rather than any lag, any delay, you know, the clunk of a relay and all that could be a detriment. But for AM work, you know, it's like, why stress things? I know there's a school of thought, a number of people building even AM transmitters. They leave the high voltage up all the time and switch other stuff because of the, you know, to eliminate the startup surges. Well, the step start circuit eliminates that. So what if it takes, you know, a half a second for your transmitter to come up or 1 second? You know? So, there you go. And then other things about the Thunderbolt is the way the 4400s are biased and operated. They run real hot. They're biased into hard conduction. So you hit the high voltage, the tubes will be pulling about 250 mils of idle. That's, say, 2 kV, 2200 volts. That's about 500 watts of energy being burned up in heat. And the tubes, of course, get rather red in the face, doing nothing. And while that may be a cleaner way to go on slop bucket, on AM, you can bias the tubes near cutoff. And the efficiency will be better, and, you know, it'll be just as good. So what I did is, they have a VR tube string in there where there's a pair of OD3s, VR150s, and then a pair of VR105s, all strung in series for the screen voltage. And then minus 75 volts of bias set with a VR75. So what I did is I pulled one of the VR105s, and I put a VR150 in its place, and then I pulled the VR75 out of its socket and put the VR105 in its place. So the bias, the screen voltage went up by about 45 volts, and the bias went up by about 30 volts, if that. Yeah, 30 volts increase there, and the idle came down to about 100 mils or so. And it took a little more power to drive. I ran the thing in the resistive input mode, in which in the original configuration, you know, it took more like 12 watts of drive. But what the hell. Then it depends on the type of tubes you're using. If you're using IMAC tubes or Amprex tubes. Amprex tubes have greater emission. They're a better tube if you can find them. And a good pair of IMACs are good for about 800 watts carrier out under tune-up, or about 150 watts carrier. That's it. You're limited to about 150 watts out. Maybe 175, depending. Whereas with the Amprexes, I could get a full kilowatt out under tune-up condition. But obviously, I didn't run any more than 200 watts out. Under those conditions, boy, that thing, you know, the Amprex graphite anodes would get hot and start making a lot of heat. That amplifier was quite the space heater, but it worked. You know, and I never had a failure with it. That's because I air-cool things and use the plate contactor. If you don't do any of that stuff, you're going to have headaches and breakdowns and all kinds of stuff. So, anyway, Marty, are you still hearing me?
Yes, I am. Marty here. I wanted to say to John that I wanted you to be able to talk to Tim some, and that's why I was not horning in like in the beginning. And Tim, you mentioned about the FT-101E. I had an FT-101B originally. And speaking of the transformers, mine went out on that, and that's why I didn't use it anymore. And then back then, being a kid mostly, I didn't know how to get another transformer. I couldn't find one anywhere. Probably these days I could find one or make some kind of substitution. But anyway, I moved on. You know, I had a TS-440S after that, and I used that until the potting compound went conductive and shunted the circuitry, you know, the anti-microphonic stuff. And it was repaired so many times. I scraped and chipped and even replaced components, but the problem would always come back. The VFO would unlock. So I went to an FT-1000D, and I had that for a lot of years until I changed my philosophies, and now I'm on the Flex 5000A software-defined radio. And I had a QSO with you once. I don't expect you to remember it. I was up in the New England States on one of my business trips, and I always put the TS-440S in the car. We had a QSO, and I'm not sure, was it 40 meters or 75? One of the two. It was at night, and that makes it sound like it might be, maybe was 75 meters. And you know, we were, I think I was too close to, I think I was in New Hampshire, and we could hear each other. You know, of course, you had more trouble hearing me. I since made the car really good. I have a 500 watt amplifier in it, and heavy gauge cable, capacitor banks, all that happy stuff. So anyway, that's the story there, and I'll do my female impersonation.
Into IRJ.
Back to you, Tim. I'm not sure if you've heard of Breaking Station FMA or something.
Is that W1TNA, KC2WTS?
That's correct. The name is Sid Sierra India Delta. I'm on my barefoot DX-60. I wonder how you're copying. Copying me okay?
Oh, you're down there, but I can hear you here in Oxford, New York. What'd you say your name was and your QTH?
My name is Sid Sierra India Delta. We're located on Cape Cod in the village of Cthulhu. Back to you.
Okay, I think I got most of that. You said you're up by Hyannis Way. But yeah, the little DX-60 is doing okay. We got stations right on top of us. It's giving more problem than anything. I'm wondering how you're receiving me up there. I'm on a homebrew pair of 4250s modulated by a pair of 810s. And it's built by a local guy down here. Just wondering how you're doing. Okay, KC2WTS.
Okay, well, you should hear me a little better now. Oops. Where are I here? Just one sec. Let me set my, make sure I got my driver open. Yeah, that's a little better. I was kind of pushing my, now I'm over-modulating. Oops. LR12, 12, 12, 12. LR12, 12, 12. Okay. Okay, I'm hearing you just fine. I put on my SB200 linear, which is giving a little bit more of a kick, I hope. And I didn't call written down. I've been running it, trying to do three things at once, and I can't even do one anymore. Huh? We're in the village of Cthulhu, which is about halfway to Falmouth and Hyannis on the south side of the Cape. And I got the SB200 linear on now, sort of boosting up the DX-60. I had the DX-60 level set a little higher than I wanted to drive the SB200 with. I kind of set it at 100 watts rest and carry. So I don't know what happened to Tim in there, but I'll give it back to you, and give me your info again, and I'll write it down. Okay.
Okay, it's Kilo Charlie 2, Whiskey Tango Sierra. I know that Timmy had some stuff to do, so maybe he's listening now. Of course, I kind of lost everybody in that last barrage of communication there. Kind of close to the other stations, or they're close to us. But there's another station, N2IRJ, Marty. I hope you're hearing us in here, and I was wondering if you'd pick it up with a breaking station, KC2 WTS.
Thanks, John. N2IRJ here, Marty, in Jackson, New Jersey. I'm in the central part of the state, about 20 miles from the Atlantic Ocean, and I welcome the Rhode Island station. I, too, had that malady of getting those slop bucket tears impinging upon my lower sideband. I couldn't hear you when you first came in, your call sign or name. I did hear eventually you're from Rhode Island. That's after I narrowed my one skirt, you know. So anyway, I'll send it over to Rhode Island. My name's Marty. Over.
Yeah, I'm back.
Oh, okay, good. We have a Rhode Island station in there, Tim. Go ahead, you can pick it up, Rhode Island, if you're hearing me.
I think maybe you have the Cape Cod station mixed up with the Rhode Island station, W1TNA. Over to you, Tim.
Yeah, how are you doing, Sid? Yeah, my time is going to become rather limited. just on a totally different note. The neighbor that owns the land that surrounds me is having his property logged. And those guys work right through the winter. And some of my antennas lie on his land. Actually, they were there before he bought the property, and they've been there for over 30 years, some of them. And including the one I'm on now, the shaded dipole, which is on the west side of the hill. And they're on the east side, where there's God knows how much land. And they're chopping and dropping trees here and there. And, you know, I expressed my concern to the neighbor, and he said, well, he already told them to be careful of my antennas. Well, as it is, they've already knocked out my receiving antenna that I have in a low noise area. So as long as they don't bring a skidder over the coax, which is in the forest floor, you know, it'll be all right. But my wife said she heard some louder than usual noise, and she said she could see probably a skidder, you know, through the trees about 400 or 500 feet from here. So the neighbor gave me a roll of yellow tape and said, here, mark the trees you want them to save. So I marked the trees, but the guy heading the crew is argumentative. Says he's taking the trees, but, you know, and claims the neighbor didn't say anything to him, so I gotta get everybody on the page. So, that's the story. So I can hear the skidder grinding away in the background as it, you know, plows the path of death and destruction to trees. So it's like, well, the tree that the 470-foot center-fed long wire goes into is a huge old buzzard tree. And they were told by the neighbor that the neighbor's wife does not want them to touch the big old buzzard trees. They're legacy trees. So, I doubt they'll be doing anything with it, but my property ends before the antenna hits that area. And as it is, there's a number of trees that are ripe for the picking that if they start chopping and dropping them indiscriminately, they drop it right on the antenna, which is very strong copper-clad steel wire, and it could damage the old buzzard tree, and it would also probably pull over my tower that is the center support. So, you know, I've got to, you know, I told them they have to work with me, and, you know, what I would have to do would be to drop the antenna, just get it out of the way, and then they can chop and drop the trees and get them out of the way, and then I can put the antenna back up. But in order to get the antenna down, I got to drag a ladder into the woods, go up the tree, and remove the wire. So, God, I tell you, I don't think I'll be doing anything today, but next couple of days, who knows. So I got to call a neighbor up, see if he's home, and meet with him, and cuss and discuss things, and go from there. So, and I got a head. Shortly. I still have my slippers on. Other than that, I'm dressed to go. Anyway, I had a few comments for you on the G5 RV that I was switching to. Well, my design of the G5 RV is basically, it has four bands and segments of those bands and does not require a coil when operated within those segments. Basically, it's a standard issue 102-foot flat top G5 RV. But instead of a half wavelength of feed line, as the original design calls for 20 meter operation, it's close to 40 feet. So what you do is you put up the antenna and you have 40 feet of the 14 gauge crappy brown stuff ladder line. And then you have a device like the MFJ SWR analyzer, and you hook the feeders right directly across the output of the SWR analyzer. Now what you want to do is play around with the length of line so that your 10 meter resonance is a 2900, right smack in the middle of the AM window. Has a flat 50 ohm match, and then it coincided with a flat match across 17 meters as well. So two bands, no tuner required. However, the 40 meter resonance was around 6900. It was flat, maybe 6950. And 80 meters was well below the band, I think around 33-something or other. So what I did is I put a pair of 1,000 picofarad transmitting capacitors, RF-rated capacitors. I use micas, big transmitting mica caps, in series with each leg. And that moved the system resonance on 40 meters up to the 40 meter band, but particularly the upper half of the band up through actually I think it's got a good match almost up to 7400 the way it is now. But it the SWR gradually goes up on 40 meters. It's its best band. It's very broad, very very broad. And and 80 meters, it moved up to 3,700. There's a window of about 25 kilohertz where it's got a really good match. And that's it. So that was the other antenna. So once again, the name of the game is where you transition from coax to the balanced feeders is to have a 50-ohm match at that point. There's all these snake oil and trick walking stick antennas that will use a certain length of coax along with the open wire or ladder balanced feeders to get a match at the end of the run. You know, oh yeah, you go to your tuner. Well, you know, what is the real Vizwire on the line? You know, I don't like using long lengths of coax to get an impedance match. You want to keep your line flat. And if you look at a standard issue G5 RV with 30 some odd feet of twin lead on it, in most cases they use the light duty, like 18 gauge wire. With a G5 RV, the current portion is buried down inside the feed line. And because the antenna is shorter than a half wavelength, your radiation resistance will be lower, meaning greater current flow, which means any resistive losses in the wire and the balanced twin lead will soak up the power. And then by the time it gets down to the coax, now at that point, it's very inductively reactive. And you can chew up a lot of power in coax when you have a reactive impedance. So, there you go. The 40-meter resonance, it was resonant at 7,700. Perfect. 50 ohms. By the time you get down here within the 40-meter handband, forget it. Vizwire very high, extremely reactive. Now, 20 meters, however, the match is about 2-to-1, which stands to reason because a 1.5 wavelength antenna is about 90 to 100 ohms radiation resistance. And you will have a bit of Vizwire there, about 2-to-1, which it did have. And, you know, every time I use the antenna and comparing it against some other antenna that I'd set up to have a good 50-ohm match, I had to just retune the transmitter. I couldn't just switch from one antenna to the other. So I started experimenting. I said to myself, this antenna's inductively reactive on 75. So I just grabbed a couple of these 1,000 puff caps that I had, just stuck them in the line just to see what the hell would happen. Hooked the Mofo Junk SWR analyzer up, and boom, 1.4-to-1 match at 3850, which is far better than it was, and it made the antenna usable on 75. The 40-meter match moved up to 7800. And 20 meters was unaffected. So what I am thinking of is a double length G5 RV where you have 204 feet of antenna, 68 feet of balanced feed line, and a pair of 2,000 puff capacitors. So what happens there is, being that antenna results are scalable, is you take the points of resonance being 3850 and 7800, divide by 2. The point should be 3,900, and the upper part of 160. maybe 1900. And, yeah, whatever. 38 something, you know. So there you go. That's the whole idea behind it. So what I got to do is make one, put it up, and play with it, and fine-tune the adjustments. And I'm thinking of several different version models, you know, like one that does the upper end of 75, another one does the lower end of 75 plus other bands, by playing around with the ladder line length a bit, and the capacitor values, you can skew it one way or the other. So that's the whole idea behind it. So that's the story. Anyway, I'm going to cut out of here. And I'll see you all later. You might as well pick Sid up there, because I want to hear your comments. There, Marty, and into IRJ and the group from WA1HDLR. We'll be just listening.
Okay, I guess you gave it to me there. Did you?
No, I gave it to Marty. Go ahead, Marty, and then Marty to Sid.
Into IRJ.
It'll be going to Sid next. Marty here in New Jersey. That interests me. This double scale version of the G5RV. I thought of doing that myself. I just didn't figure all the mathematics in my head so precisely like you did, this scalable up version. I did something analogous to what you did years ago. I had this double extended Zephyr 160 meters. And I cut the ladder line. It wasn't the brown stuff like yours. It was the black crap stuff, 450 ohm, you know. I now use homebrew balanced feeders, maybe about 550 ohms. Not using them on this QSO, though. Hurricane Sandy relieved me of that antenna, and I have to get it, you know, resurrected, and then I think I'll have an even better signal. But the point is that, man, towards the end, I 1 inch cutting that ladder line mattered. And I was surprised how touchy you got. But boy, when I got that thing tuned, I had 160 meters and 80 and 40, and I don't think anyone in the world has ever pulled that combination off. And my length was longer of the ladder line than yours. But I just hit the right balance. But boy, did it take a lot of experimentation. And I was going to ask you what the capacitance was, and you answered 1,000 picofarads each. And then doubling that, I guess you said you need to do for the double length version. I'm really interested in knowing more about that as you evolve that, and you will be spending time though tweaking and adjusting. I mean, I thought it was a really elegant solution to make it that way. It's so elegant when you can have impedance transformation through a length of you know, ladder line, because the loss is so low, even if there is some visuar. Okay, that's the story on that, Tim. And you have to go, too. And I will turn it over now to the station that made inquiry there. And I forgot your name. Sorry, my name's Marty. And I don't have that great of a copy. For one reason, there's still some people invading the past, man, even though I've narrowed it. Over to you now.
Morning, the truck that's supposed to cut the tree down showed up. And so I went manly out and got my car. driveway because they have to go in my driveway to cut the damn tree down. And I put my car out on the street, and the next thing I know, he drives away. Here and I got a lot of land behind me. I've got a, well, I got a narrow lot and a deep lot. And behind my lot is actually a retired cranberry bog, which is called wetland, which is all protected. So I go back, I don't know, 5 or 6, maybe 8 feet back. But it's all heavily trees and it's all way downhill. It goes down, 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 down. Your antenna. I think you have what could be truly called an antenna farm, and I've got what I call my antenna pot, like a pot of plants. That's about all the antenna I got up right now. I was hoping you'd be back in there a little, Tim, because I was going to put on the PBS and see what you thought of the audio. I had it on the other day.
I don't see a carrier. You turn it over to somebody. Marty here. I'll just briefly comment that here in New Jersey, we have cranberry bogs too. And that name is the city where I used to work, about 20 miles north of where I'm located in Jackson, New Jersey. They spell it C-R-A-N-B-U-R-Y, cranberry. A lot of people call it cranberry, in reference to the cranberry bogs. And I should have said this before when Tim was speaking of trees, and he mentioned it again. My neighbor, my next-door neighbor, is from Haiti, and Haitians have it in their blood to cut down every tree in sight, and that's what happened here. And then he dropped one across the property line and ripped down my steerable null beverage antenna. That was a really advanced antenna. It was complicated. It was a full wave on the top and about a foot separation underneath a half wave that was phased into. There was a double toroid special ferrite material transformers at one, two coax cables running back to the shack with an RLC circuit. I could tune that thing and steer it. I could null European broadcast stations on 40 meters, then have a QSO with 6 land. It was so neat, but he relieved me of that. So anyway, at one time, about 25 years ago, I was the only house in the whole area. It was beautiful. I had my privacy, perfect ham radio conditions, but then they came, these neighbors, the developers. So now I have all that to contend with, and that's the story there. I need to go too, but I thought I'd interject that. And let me pass it on over to John, who can pass around everyone else who hasn't been chatting in a while. Into IRJ, I'll be clearing out, and I'll give you my farewell bid here.
Into IRJ.
Over to you, John. If we're Johnless, it's up for grabs. I couldn't copy through the upper QRM, upper band. There was a station on 7290 much of the time during these transmissions, and I had trouble hearing people. So you guys pick it up. Have a nice Q. So see you, Tim, and everyone. Bye.
My receiver is an HQ110, and it's broad enough, so I hear another QSO actually coming in off on the skirt. And I don't hear John at all. So I'm going to say 7 Priest to Wall 2 also. This is Whiskey 1 Tango, November Alpha.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.